Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 24th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on where we left off last week on the scripture reading. Scripture reading is in Matthew chapter 3 today, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. In those days came John the Baptist preaching in the wilderness of Judea, and saying, Repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. For this is he that was spoken of by the prophet Esaias, saying, The voice of one crying in the wilderness, Prepare ye the way of the Lord, make his paths straight. And the same John had his raiment of camel's hair, and a leathern girdle about his loins, and his meat was locusts and wild honey. Then went out to him Jerusalem and all Judea and all the region round about Jordan, and were baptized of him in Jordan, confessing their sins. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees come to his baptism, he said unto them, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits meet for repentance, and think not to say within yourselves, We have Abraham to our father. For I say unto you, that God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham. And now also the axe is laid unto the root of the trees. Therefore every tree which bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. I indeed baptize you with water unto repentance. But he that cometh after me is mightier than I, whose shoes I am not worthy to bear. He shall baptize you with the Holy Ghost and with fire, whose fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the garner, but he will burn up the chaff with unquenchable fire. Then cometh Jesus from Galilee to Jordan unto John to be baptized of him. But John forbade him, saying, I have need to be baptized of thee, and comest thou to me? And Jesus answering said unto him, Suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he suffered him. And Jesus, when he was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the heavens were opened unto him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove, and lighting upon him. And lo, a voice from heaven, saying, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased.
Okay, I don't think we have a topic particularly. Next week we're going to be talking quite a bit about, probably, about the 14th Amendment. We do have a paper going in. It's pretty well finished, but we're passing it around, get some comments on the paper before we file it. It's only a three-pager. It's a short one, but I think it's a pretty powerful one. And it's setting the stage for our next few steps with our paper filing in the United States Supreme Court. Do we, Jan or Terry, do we have any questions or any announcements? Well, I guess first we'll go for announcements. Do we have any announcements to be made?
Well, John, we do, and I'm sure you're going to cover it in infinite detail here shortly, and that's the sheriff's campaign.
And yeah, well, that's probably what I'm going to talk about after we go through all this, so we'll save that. But go ahead.
Okay, so other than that, I don't know if people are aware that you filed a press release here a week or two ago, so I put a reference to that in the
Yeah, I don't, you know, I know you sent something. I don't recall filing a press release in quite some time. I was kind of confused by that. So, but anyway, we'll look at that and talk about that tomorrow or something off the air. So somewhere we made an error somewhere, I don't know.
Okay, other than that, then there's a series of questions.
Okay, let's go to questions.
First question, could you please tell me how Steve Bannon's arrest affects this group and also where you or your organization stands on the issue? I'm confused and dumbfounded. It seems so surreal.
Yeah, well, Steve Bannon is a very powerful speaker. He's a very strong supporter of Trump. I know that they differed somewhat in their thinking between Steve and Trump. At least I perceive that's the case. I don't perceive there's any hard feelings between them. And Trump likes the opposite thinking. Steve Bannon did kind of push Trump in certain directions when he was campaigning in 2016, and he was right all the way along. But in any event, I'm convinced that he's set up, just like everyone else that they've been going after. So they went, after Flynn, and I don't think anybody believes that Flynn is guilty of anything. And then they went after Stone. I don't think Stone lied, but maybe he did. Stone, I don't know that well. I know about Stone. I know he's involved quite a bit in campaigning. That's what he does, is help set up campaigns. But in any event, I think Stone was set up also. Steve Bannon is no different. I perceive he's a man of great integrity. I think it was suggested by BCP that they're probably going after him because he probably took some of those monies in order to support the basic things to support any kind of an activity. For instance, you have certain costs that are covered. If you take, for instance, any kind of a program where they're taking money to support some kind of a situation and they're doing it without profit, non-profit, maybe you'll find 10% or 20% going to the cause and the other 80% will be eaten up in cost, operating cost, advertising cost, and things like that. In the case of Bannon, considering the fact that one news network mentioned, $100,000 or something like that, and another one, more or less reliable source, it was like $1 million. Even if you took $1 million out of the $20 million and you worked out the percentage, or even more likely it's probably $100,000, it might be 2, 3, 4, 5% that they used for overhead costs. I mean, why would anyone take that out of their pocket? And I perceive that's the game that they're playing. So 100% didn't go into building the wall. Maybe 95% went into building the wall, and the other 3, 4, 5% went on course to in order to get the word out and advertise and do whatever things they had to do, because there's always cost in the background no matter what you do. So anyway, that's the perception of BCP, and I think that sounds pretty logical. That might be the game they're playing. I do know that he did make a short announcement. I've been looking for something more detailed, but a short announcement, and he didn't do anything wrong, and I believe him. So I don't think there's anything there. Next question.
Okay. I hear
you. And by the way, whatever Steve Bannon does or any other group or individual does doesn't affect us. We are focused on what we're doing. We are National Liberty Alliance. We try to bring alliances together. We are bringing certain groups together. There are a couple of groups that are going to be joining with us, I think, in the very near future. We're joining with groups of sheriffs two specific groups. We have GR, who has come to work with us, and he's brought with him to the Republic Review, a very strong, powerful, and important project that we are supporting and will be supported by the committee men particularly. You can find information on that under People's Duty. And you can come down, let me see where it's at, Republic Review. Anybody's not familiar with this Republic Review, when you get a chance, you should read this page. It's a very powerful program. It's a very important program. It works beautifully with what we're doing. GR and his association is kind of connecting with us, and we're supporting him. He's supporting us. We are going to be working with him to connect him with all of the committeemen as we start to build the committeemen around the nation, because it's the committeemen that's got to run this program. We need people across the nation in every county, and this is a committeeman program. And, of course, we are building a committeeman across the nation. We need thousands and thousands and thousands of committeemen, people involved. And to get details on that, again, people's duty. You know, the most important tab, or one of the most important tabs on our website, is what's under the people's duty, because this is what you have to do, we the people. And shame on us if we don't do this. We have to be responsible. It's up to us to save this nation for ourselves and our posterity. Your children are depending upon this. Friends and neighbors and people who are kind of ignorant yet to what's going on, they don't know yet, but they are depending on us. If we don't save our courts, if we don't bring our courts back to courts of justice, because right now they are courts of injustice, if we don't bring them back and we don't take control of our courts, there is no liberty. It doesn't matter what Trump does. That's only a Band-Aid. And look, Trump can bring this nation to the position where it needs to be, and then he needs to support the people to take back control of having government by consent. And that's what we're all about. It's teaching people how to have government by consent. And you'll find the details and information, the instructions, the education of that under people's duty here. Campaigning for constitutional sheriffs is part of the process and part of the process that we have to work out to get our sheriffs educated, which we'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. But also an education of the people. Once we get our foot into the door, into the courts, we need only to win in our case in the federal court as we are before the United States Supreme Court. They don't want us before them. They're doing everything else to ignore us. But we're sending them papers. We're banging on their door. We're nailing it to their door. They have a duty to speak, a duty to respond. I think the paper we just wrote that we will be reading next week is really a powerful paper to make the point we're talking about right now, but what duty the United States Supreme Court has and how they must respond to it. And if they do not respond to what we are telling them, then they are guilty of subversion. They are guilty of aiding and abetting. And I think next week when we read the paper, people will see that. I was going to read that tonight, but I thought we have a meeting coming up on Wednesday with a few people talk about the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment plays a little role, actually a pretty powerful role, believe it or not. But we're going to talk about the 14th Amendment next week. One of the problems with the 14th Amendment is it's beginning of its introduction to the 14th Amendment, which talks about being subject to the jurisdiction therein. And again, we will talk about that next week. We're not going to necessarily talk about it tonight. But anyway, everybody should be registered to vote. Everybody should be organizing their county or being involved in someone who's organizing to participate. Everyone should consider becoming a committeeman once in their life. Now is the time for the people who are awake, who are hearing these messages that we bring forward every Monday. You know, it's up to you. You have a duty to respond. You have a duty to take control because you're being given knowledge to be able to to take back control of our government, to have government by consent, and to teach others around you and pass it on to others. So everybody needs to become a committeeman. Everybody needs to become a committeeman. It's a very simple thing. It's a two-year commitment, and it only involves about 40 hours a year in most places, if that. Okay, and it's generally around election time, and it is a great job because what you get to do is to interview the people who want to get onto the tickets, you know, to become elected, whatever position is they're looking, door catcher or president of the United States. Now, not necessarily president. We don't get to interview the president for president, but we do get to, for our congressmen, our senators, we get to interview these individuals and decide whether they're worthy of being our senators or being our representatives. And the reason why we have all these corrupt individuals in office is because we, the people, aren't doing our job and consenting to whether we want these people in our office or not. We also have the power and the authority through the committee man, which we teach here on our website. If you go to the committee man, becoming a committee man, and read everything and watch the videos on that page, and committee man members in your county, and the petition process, and the proposed party rules, all that information together, you know, we will be teaching people quite a bit of things that they can do to control those people that we have elected into elected office. If they become problematic, the power of recall. That's the power of the committee man. You know, all the people involved with the Tea Party, getting involved back way back, and the Tea Party became big back, I think it was 2008 when that started to surface. 2007, 2008 was the Ron Paul movement, and that kind of turned into the Tea Party movement, and there's a lot of different kinds of liberty names and stuff, but it's all pretty much the same, people wanting to do something. Well, here is the most important thing to do. This is it right here. You know, I remember Glenn Beck talking a while back. He's saying, where is our George Washington? We need our George Washington. We don't have our George Washington. Who's going to step up and be that George Washington? And Donald Trump stepped up to become that George Washington, in my very, very strong opinion. And he's going to lead this nation back to a nation of justice, I believe. And I do believe at the end of the day, he can't do anything right now. I believe we're going to get a lot of support from him to lift up the people, we the people, to take back control of our political process and our judicial process. People need to learn and to know that this judicial process is supposed to be controlled by the people, not by judges, not by prosecutors, but by the people. We decide, untainted, untainted, I guess, is a simple enough word, and unstacked, that was the other word I was thinking of, because right now every grand jury is stacked. Every trial jury is stacked. They want the right person in the right place so that they can get their ham sandwich indictment, or so that they can get their jury decision. They want the indictment, and they want the people found guilty. And they push, of course, very hard to make a deal, because they let you know, hey, buddy, you're going to jail for 10, 20 years, you know. We're going to make a deal with you. Give you 3 years. And people take it. You know, constantly people are taking those kind of things. We have so many people that are in jail that don't belong there. And this is a corrupt court system. It is corrupt to the core. It's corrupt from the lowest court all the way up to the highest court in this nation. And yes, I do mean the United States Supreme Court is corrupt. There's no doubt about it. They're not doing the right thing. Now, I do believe that there are some justices up in the Supreme Court that hopefully are going to do the right thing when the time comes, and they want to do the right thing. But, you know, you have to remember, they were taught by Bar, the Bar Association. So they've gone to bar schools. But on the other hand, they have been highly educated in the Constitution. And most of that becomes self-education. You can't become really great at anything unless you become self-educated. You know, you can go to school, get your necessary education, get all the prerequisites, and now you're ready to go out to really learn when you get out into the field of working. And it's the same thing with anything, and particularly with the United States Supreme Court. You know, reading cases and studying and understanding, you know, the differences between law and equity. We got to believe they know the difference between law and equity. I cannot believe that they don't know it. It'd be absurd to think that they don't understand the difference. And law identifies with common law or natural law, whatever word you want to give it. We'll give it natural law, because they try to call common law something else. So it's natural law. And natural law belongs to the people. The people decide whether someone is going to be indicted or not. The people decide whether they're going to convict someone or not. The people decide what the punishment might be. The people decide, not the judge. The people decides what is the law, not the judge and not the prosecutor. And the people have to understand the power and the authority that they have. These people there are only traffic cops as far as the judges is concerned. And the prosecutor does not belong talking to the grand jury. That is not known in history. That's only something that's been going on the past 50, 60, 80 years, at least my lifetime. You know, the federal courts, they didn't have the power. United States attorneys, U.S. attorneys didn't have the power or the authority to call forth the grand jury until the 1970s. I remember, I think it was 1972 particularly, but it was early 1970s. Prior to that, there was no code or statute that gave them authority to call forth the grand jury. Now, how did they call before it before? I don't know. I've tried to look into that, and I guess I got to dig deeper, but that's something that needs to be explored. But in any event, it has always been generally the sheriff or the coroner that addresses the jury. You know, if someone has a situation, a crime that they want to report, and they want to file an affidavit of a crime or a crime against them or something, it would be filed with the police, but ultimately goes to the sheriff, and the sheriff then takes the evidence and decides on whether he's going to take it to the grand jury or not. And as long as there's a sworn affidavit, he's committed to do that. But they got to look at all the evidence. And so the sheriff, right now the attorneys, they're biased. There's a lot of reasons why they need to get their convictions. Ultimately, most of them that they're trying to get through are status quo convictions. The judges work with them. They're status quo. They maintain the status quo. So if you're a sovereign citizen that they claim that you are that, and they want to get you indicted for that and eventually, sentenced for that kind of whatever that they're claiming that is, they're going to do that because, again, they're maintaining status quo. They don't want people to interfere with their RICO on steroids, and that's what it's all about. It's all about money. These judges have all been paid off, it seems. I don't want to say all of them. You know, there are some good judges. Trump's been putting in quite a few judges. Trump, of course, has put in a couple of judges on the United States Supreme Court. In the next 4 years, I'm sure he's going to get one or two more in there, or at least one. And I'm sure he's going to get quite a few more judges. But you know what? We got to get rid of these judges that have this Marxist slant to them. And we need to identify who these judges are. Matter of fact, we're trying to put together an investigative group, a committee. We've got an individual that we'll be meeting with this week who has volunteered for some of that work. And we need to get a committee together. I've spent the weekend going out. I found this very quickly, as a matter of fact. I was very surprised how fast I was able to find this. But I got a list of all of the congressmen and a few senators that are Marxist. And they don't hide it at all. And for them to use their elected position as a springboard to bring forward Marxism, which cannot continue with a constitutional republic. It's like oil and water. It doesn't work. You either have one or the other. But anyway, when they raise their hand to swear an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution, if they like Marxism and they've read and they think this is what we should be, or what they should be, shall I say, first of all, they should move to another state, another country, because they don't need to be here. We have a constitutional republic. But in any event, they can believe or think or want anything they want. But once they take that oath, they have a duty to uphold and to support the Constitution. And they are assaulting our Constitution. They are assaulting we the people, and they are doing it overtly, right in front of our faces. Some of them even say, yeah, they're Marxists, communists, socialists, Marxists. It's all the same thing ultimately. They don't hide it. Well, they should be recalled. They should be removed from office. And as a matter of fact, our paper has something to do with that we're going to be reading next week. But in any event, the people need to take control. The people need to make the decisions. We need to take control of the courts, 100% of the courts. The judges, no elected official, none, zero, none, have anything to do with courts of law. Yeah, they are participants, but they don't control it. They don't make the decisions. They don't decide who's innocent or guilty, and they don't decide what the law is and the law isn't. They can suggest to you what they think the law is, but it's up to the people to know what the law is and to deny them when the law is repugnant or doesn't apply. And laws don't apply to the people. Laws apply only to the bureaucrat, to the elected individual, to the appointed individual, the individual who's employed by the government or to some commercial activities, particularly between states. And then, of course, within the states, there are commercial activities. There are regulations that they have to follow, rules, regulations, statutes. But that's for those activities. Has nothing to do with we the people. And until the people come to realize that, we could never bring our courts of law back. We could never have common law, and you could never have liberty. These people who are using their positions, in my opinion, they definitely should be removed from office, and there is a couple of ways that could be done. And it starts with the United States Supreme Court, and that's what, again, this paper is about. But they can be removed from court, and our last line of defense in this is to indict these people and remove them that way. And if that's what we have to do, then that's what we have to do. But these people that are out there and actually going up against the Second Amendment, they're denying our natural law. They're denying our unalienable rights given by God, not by them. They can't take that away from us. They can't define it for us. We could define it ourselves, we the people. Clearly, the Second Amendment is to have a secured, free state. The Constitution is clear on that. That's the purpose of the Second Amendment. Not to go hunting, not to go target practicing, but to secure the states, to secure liberty. The last possible thing that we could do. A posse comitatus with a sheriff, if necessary, or the militia. Even the people themselves can bring up the militia and come forward. We don't need a governor or a president to call us, but we can muster ourselves and come together. In the case of within our counties, we probably then, of course, should place ourselves under the sheriff, and the sheriff should have knowledge of this process. And we're there to protect the borders of our counties and ultimately the borders of our states and ultimately the borders of the whole United States. But the people, we have government by consent, and we've given them very little power. That we gave them no power, no authority to govern our behavior. That's our job. And common law is clear. You don't need a mountain of books to understand common law. You only need to know what's right and wrong. And everybody generally, some people maybe, psychologically ill or something, may not know the difference between right and wrong. But generally speaking, everybody knows right and wrong. God said he put it into the hearts. And so we have it in our hearts. We know. So the only thing anybody has to know about common law, as far as really sitting on a jury for people to obey, is to do no harm. And if someone does harm, the jury can see that, and the jury can understand what kind of a repercussion comes to an individual who has been harmed in one way or another. We're all human beings. We live in society. And they can figure it out. We don't need government telling us. Common law gives it to the people, not to the judge, not to the government, to the people. And when the government controls the common law process, when the government controls the grand jury and the trial jury, we have lost our liberty, we have lost our control. And the same thing is true with the political process. If the government controls the political process, we have lost our liberty. And the people at this point do not control the political process. We need to take it back through the committee men. All right, I know I went a little overboard on that one, but where are we? Jan, reel me back in.
Okay. Let me pull up the next question here. Now, below is the Montana code about voting. Our governor is letting each county decide how they should vote. Would this be something NLA or the USCLGJ be a part of? And here's the code, Montana Code, annotated Title 13, Chapter 19, Part 1, in brackets 13 through 19-104 says, 3, the following elections may not be conducted by mail ballot. Under that is A, a regularly scheduled federal, state, or county election, and B, a special federal or state election unless authorized by the legislature. Okay.
Well, that the bottom line with voting, okay, every state has election laws. I'm very familiar with New York election law because I was involved with the committeeman process and learning that and trying to discover, the job and the election of a committeeman and so on. In the election law, it permits mailing in a ballot for being absent, an absentee ballot. And it could be for numerous reasons. Trump talks about this often. It could be numerous reasons. It could be you're out of state, out of town, whatever. It could be that you're ill and you can't get in there. But there is a process, and that process has to take its course, and they know exactly who it is and where that ballot is going and how that process is going to be go forward for the election. So everything is detailed. There is no law or no details, at least not in New York, and I doubt it's in any state, for mail-in ballots. So that law doesn't exist. So whatever any governor is doing, they're doing it illegally, number one. And number two, if the legislators were to try to do something about that and create some legislation, which I doubt, I haven't heard anything about any legislators trying to do anything with that, they're going to make sure that it harmonizes with the rest of the election law. And they have to be able to set it up in such a way that there couldn't be any problems as far as the voting being stolen ultimately and abused and the votes lost and so on and so forth. Quite some time ago, I got to think 2 months ago, month and a half ago at least, we got a bunch of ballots here. I'm in New York by the mail for voting. I didn't even look at them. I started reading through it, and it was like, you could vote through mail, blah, blah. I just ripped it up and threw it away. It doesn't mean anything to me. It can never stand. There's no law for it. It's not lawful, just to begin with. And Trump is toying them along, and he's reeling them in. I think he's got some Trump cards on that, just using the law itself. But I do believe that he's going through the legal process to prevent that from happening also. And he's going to win, hands down, because there is no law to provide for that. And there's no way you can control that. And there's no way we would know who the president is for many, many weeks or months, and perhaps even longer than that. And he's right with all of the way they're trying to do it. We'll never know who wins the election. So look, they're only trying to get chaos going. There's not going to be any mailing in votes. There is no law to back it up. I doubt any state has that, but go ahead.
I have information that Trump's been trolling them with this mail-in voting thing, and he's telling them, no, we can't do it. But in the meantime, he's controlling the post office, and 2 years ago or something, he exercised a patent on blockchain technology, where you can vote.
I was wondering how that works. Do you know how that works? Blockchain.
Blockchain, you can't hack. It's a computer code. That's why they use it for the money, because nobody can break it. And I don't, I'm sure there's somebody could give a better explanation of blockchain, but they use it for Bitcoin and that type of stuff. Where you have your money in Bitcoin, they use it in those platforms. But it's a very powerful encryption, and it's new technology, and it was designed for the post office though, so that you can send a message through this technology, and it instantaneously gets there. It verifies who you are, And then when you send the vote in, it separates your information from the vote, so they don't know how you voted. So he's telling them, no, you can't do it. But in the meantime, he quietly has implemented this in the post office. So if they want to go through, and it'll actually be safer than the voting booth, because right now at the voting booth, they can play with it. You have election, you know, you got poll watchers, and you got, you know, supposedly a paper backup and this and that. But meanwhile, we know George Soros has wrote the program, his company, for the voting machines, and there's been a lot of trouble with votes getting changed. Only Democrats coming up when you're pulling Republican levers. This would end all that. It would end all the voter fraud. You know, last time Trump got elected, but he made sure the military intelligence went and the FBI and all them went to those different areas where they knew that the Democrats were playing with the machines, and they went in and busted them, and they made sure that they were pristine, because they knew that, you know, in order to get the electoral votes, they knew the areas that they had to target in order to make, and that's what they did. So there's a lot more going on than what, you know, you're not going to hear about it on the mainstream media, and I don't think they've caught on to it yet.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think, even if they wanted to go that route, until they do understand it and start applying that process, it may become too late for them to even do that. And yeah, there's got to be a way to protect the vote. That's why we have watchers. Who's going to watch the votes going through the mail and into the post office and coming back onto the other side and so on and so forth? And again, there is a process for that, for absentee ballots. But, again, on a large scale is insane. But, okay.
I have some more information on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dan wrote that after the status meeting. During the status meeting...
You're going to have to get a little closer and speak louder. I can't hear you.
Okay, how's that?
Oh, yeah. That's
okay.
Good.
So Dan in Montana said that he found the regs, and I think they were with Jan. He found the statute in state statutes that says you cannot hold a mail-in ballot for a scheduled election. But the governor has said, oh, yeah, everybody can do a mail-in ballot this year. That's what we're going to do. And so he's actually violating the law. And he wants to know if NLA wants to press that, or if he should go on and try it.
Well, yeah, look, I know the president is battling it, and we can get involved if we have the manpower to be able to do this. I mean, we could write the papers, but whenever you write a paper, there's a tremendous amount of investigation and research that takes place prior to the paper being written, depending on the subject matter, and some could be pretty quick, and you can find everything you need quickly, and some take some time. We do, you know, what I'd love to do, and this is a really large project, but if we have maybe, you know, three or four people working on it over the course of a week or two, I think they can probably get all the information we need. I would like to look at every single federal judge. And there are reports out on everyone in government, whether they're judges, you know, how they voted, you know, what kind of cases came before them in the case of judges, and how they voted in that case, and so on and so forth, positions and writings from judges. And the same thing, of course, is with our elected officials as far as those who represent us in Congress, you know, whether it's the House or the Senate. Again, there's a record. That I was able to find very quickly, and to find all of the Marxists, and they don't even try to hide from this. You know, here again, this is only because we, the people, are that ignorant. Okay, we are that ignorant not to realize that you can't use an elected office to bring forward another form of government, which would take down the existing government, and using that political office and platform in order to do that, and to do it overtly. They don't even do it covertly, although they are working on it covertly, but they're doing it overtly. They're doing it right in front of our face. And we're not doing anything about it because we're that ignorant to the law. If the people wouldn't, they wouldn't get away with it. It wouldn't last a moment. You know, go back 30, 40 years. Times were so different, and again, even back then, things were so corrupt and big problems. A lot of it was hidden, and most of it was covert. You know, back in the 30s, they had this big communist movement. They had the 1934 ultimately, and ended up with the Rules Enabling Act. And in 1938, they exercised it. In 1939, they were having communist meetings down in New York City, major events. And there was movements. There was the Rees Committee back in the late 30s and early 40s. Actually, I think it was in the 40s and the late 40s, early 50s. But the Rees Committee, which was investigating un-American activities, which was communism, and it was being supported by these trusts, these large corporate trusts, and Carnegie was involved with this. Rockefeller was involved with this. All of their organizations were involved with this covert operations. And all this was revealed. And we have an interview, a guy named Norman Dodd, who was the lead investigator of the Rees Committee as far as the investigating part was concerned. He was interviewed. We have that interview up on National Liberty Alliance, and we also, matter of fact, we included that in our civics course, the Norman Dodd interview. Once it's being revealed, they were trying to, quash it, but again, they were so deeply embedded, it couldn't get out, and the people already were being ignorant. And, you get into the 60s and the 70s and forget about it. We've lost it all. We know that we have certain rights and we think we're free, but we really don't know the details. And they just chew at this, they hammer at this, pick at this, little at a time, little by little by little, until we have nothing. And it's time for the people to step up and do something. It's time for people to get educated. It's time for people to take control and have government by consent and to teach our children to do the same. We need to teach our children in school not what to think, but how to think. You go visit the schools, try to get a visit to your school, say, I want to sit in the back of the room here and listen in what you're teaching my child. Years ago you could do that, by the way. I don't know if they let you do that today, because you'll see all their Marxist teachings and they're hiding it. They don't even give the kids textbooks anymore. And they could change things as they go along, depending on how far advanced they're moving the kids, whatever their strategy is and their psychology is, I don't know. The bottom line is they're teaching them Marxism. They're teaching them anti-God things. And we need to replace that with civics. We need to bring in the Constitution. We need to teach our heritage. And you know what? I know a lot of people, not a lot of people, but some people will get upset with this, but you can't get around it. These are biblical principles, and you got to bring these biblical principles up to teach. Without it, you cannot have liberty. You can't have unalienable rights. You can't have. You can't look into the history to see where we've come from and why we are who we are, and why we are. But what it is all about, that where we come from. We come from common law. A biblical principle goes back to the Mosaic law, 1600 BC, and we have to teach our children the right things in school. We need to teach our children how to think and not what to think. You go in and you teach certain things, of course, methodical, mathematics. And even with math, there are different ways to get different things. But nevertheless, we need the basics, the prerequisites, reading and writing and arithmetic. But we have to teach our children how to think, not what to think. And we need to give them the civics. We need to give them our heritage. We need to give them the Constitution, and without which we can't be free. We cannot have liberty. So that's what this is all about. Until the people can take that, the Great Enlightening took place in the 1600s, mid 1600s it started. And it was in the 1700s where our founding fathers responded to that Great Enlightening and built the nation we have. And today, hopefully, we're going through the tail end of that Great Enlightening, where we can really, because we can really get the message out. We've got computers and we've got control. We've got children. All our children go to school. We can make sure our schools teach the proper things and give our children the proper tools. Every child should learn how to handle a weapon from going to school. A rifle and a handgun. Every child should know how to defend themselves in a court. They should understand the difference between law and equity. They should be able to represent themselves in a court. By the time they get out of high school, they should know these things. Every child should learn to drive in school. All these things, because these are rights. And they shouldn't, if they're going to exercise their rights, they should know how to exercise their rights safely and responsibly. And that's the purpose of school. If you're going to exercise the Second Amendment, you're going to expect that your child should learn about the Second Amendment, and the Second Amendment gets involved with how to handle a weapon. Every child should understand they're part of the militia, and they should be registered in their county as the militia, on call when necessary, by either the governor, the president, or the sheriff. But people don't know these things. They don't think about these things. It's not part of their life. It's not part of, they've taken control of our lives. They tell us what to think and when to think it. All this texting and stuff, all of these entertainments, music and movies and all these things, it's all about control, and they're just sending us through a reality that they created. And we should be thinking about other things. So it's up to us, those who are hearing this message, to respond to the message and do something about it. They need to be the leaders, and they need to be the ones to get others in the county. Some people may not be able to speak much, very well. Maybe everybody understands a lot of what we're talking about. Maybe they can't articulate it. That's okay. Everybody can't articulate it. But they can participate, and they can work to organize. Everybody could do that, and you'll find the right people will rise up that'll be able to articulate the message well and move things along. But we need to teach our children how to articulate their positions and thinking. But we need to teach our children how to get up and speak before a group. Everybody should know how to do that, and everybody should feel comfortable to be able to do that. But unless we've done it before, we shy away from it. Sometimes I know when I wasn't trained as a speaker or anything, and I know I would never speak before a large crowd years and years ago. But little by little, I've been able to do it. And we should teach our children how to do it. And again, they need to know the court system. They need to know our government structure, how it works, and why it is the way it is. They need to know blow by blow in the Constitution, the powers and the authorities that we've given. They need to know what their Bill of Rights is. I mean, we have a lot more rights than what's listed in the Bill of Rights, but the Bill of Rights is the principles. It's really the principle of the foundation of our liberties. And our children should know every single one of them. And we should expect all of our elected officials to understand them, know them, and not violate them. And when they do, we need to correct them. If they don't receive correction, we need to remove them from office. And if we are the committee men, we can recall them within 90 days and bring in a new election. And if necessary, we can indict them and remove them from office. But we need to take control. The people need to know how to do it. And by the way, that gets back to the book that I just wrote, Government by Consent. It's about 1,000 pages. Spoke with my publisher. I think they said it was going to be 998 pages, so it's 1,000 pages. I think it's going to be a few pages more than that. So it's going to be a little over 1,000 pages. So it's a big book. There's a lot in there. But it covers everything you really need to know to have government by consent. The only thing I didn't include in that book, because it was just getting so big, I'm going to have to do another one, is I'm going to write a book on court access and put in all the necessary forms and explain them and explain the process and how the courts work and how to write papers and put all that stuff together. That'll be my next book. Maybe I'll approach that in January of next year. I think I have enough written that I could probably write the book in a month. And I think the book will be quite hefty also, probably at least half of this book, 500 pages at least, probably. But it'll lay out everything people you really need to know on how to get into the courts and how the. I had so many questions. You know, we went to court. We had to go through the Court of Hard Knocks, or the School of Hard Knocks, shall I say, but the Court of Hard Knocks too. And you know, we'd go in and make a mistake and throw us. And we were stupid enough to know that they could throw to think that they could throw us out without by making a mistake. They had no right or authority to throw us out. They should have corrected us. They had a duty to correct us. They had, no, that's not how it works, and this is what you need to do. This is the way it's supposed to have been. But they don't do that. They don't do that. And that's why people lose in court day in and day out, these little priestly secrets. You know, Jefferson spoke about this with the lawyers. They were like priestly. They got all these priestly things. And it's all hidden. And you know, you got to go to their, in our case, you got to go to your bar school, you know. And again, you know, what they teach in school, as far as the laws are concerned, the statutes and the regulations and so on and so forth, is necessary for those lawyers who are going to practice law in those particular jurisdictions. There are 57 jurisdictions, and many of them will practice law in most of those jurisdictions, but some will specialize. I mean, to be able to defend the President of the United States, I think there's like 1,000 pages of statutes and regulations and rules and stuff, and so on. You know, so I mean, there's a lot there, and we need lawyers who are studying that. The problem is that the bar schools are teaching that stuff maybe, but they're also teaching that common law is court decisions. It's a, you know, a building up of court decision, the construction of court, you know, Supreme Court decisions. And as a matter of fact, even trial court decisions. Trial court decisions hold no weight at all, you know. But in any event, that's what they teach common law is. They don't know what natural law is, what common law is. Common law is natural law. And of course, the Rules Enabling Act combined the law and equity and called it civil law. So we're back in Babylon. We're under the thumb of the Babylonian king. And that's where we're at. And if we, the people, don't change that, no matter what Trump does, no matter where we get to, we're only going to end up right back here again. Our children will be slaves unless we take control and have government by consent. We, the people, must do it. So we must learn to do that. So again, you know, this book here that I wrote is exactly what this is all about. It covers everything. And if you look at the table of contents in there, you'll see that you can use this as a reference book when you're writing papers or going into court, you know, because you can find things very quickly by going through the table of contents. I don't even remember what the question was, but what's the next question, Jan? As a matter of fact, read that last question again. I'll make sure I answered that also.
I would if I could, but I can't because I erased it.
So you won't. Okay, go ahead. I'm sure I answered the question.
Okay. On the Thursday night call, the subject of alloidal titles and land patents frequently arises. I know that NLA is already engrossed in several different endeavors, but I had suggested to Terry that these frequent discussions of this subject warrants some sort of workshop or a tutorial on the education and procurement.
Well,
just an education or explanation on the importance of the true property ownership and the contrast between real property and private property is essential.
Well, look, you know, to go through that process does get involved. We did look into it a little bit. Gerard might have looked into it more depthly than I did, but I did look into it a little bit. We had another individual that got really involved and deep into it. It's really involved, but on the one hand, but why should we have to do that? Why should we have to go change the ownership of our property into alloidal titles? Why do we need to do that? We believe we own it. They tricked us. They deceived us. First of all, you have to get the slave ignorant and make sure the slave stays ignorant so that you can trick them. So we've been ignorant for a long time. But I'll tell you what, from what I have seen, I really do believe it's as simple as going down into the town where the registry is and for the, you know, the titles. It's in the county, actually. and push forward the fact that you want your property changed from residential to private. Now, they're not going to want to do that, and I would make it a court battle. I'll look into that, because that would be a simple research and maybe a simple paper, and it's a matter of really pressing forward. But remember, it's an uphill battle because they still control the courts. They want to maintain the status quo, and they want to steal our money, and they want to tax everything they can. But on the other side of the coin is that when the deep state is eradicated and they are removed out of the way, and there is no place for these people to hide, no rocks to hide under, no place to hang their hat, so to speak, as far as a judge is concerned, they're going to have to go forward with the law, and it'll be a lot easier to push it through the courts. So my thinking is this. I think we're so close. I do believe this year there's going to be lots of arrests, and we're going to go into next year with more arrests and more trials, or maybe the trials mostly will be in next year, but most of the arrests and the major arrests, I think, will probably be taking place this year. Maybe we won't see Obama and Biden and a few others not arrested or focused in on until after the election or until next year. But if they do before, I don't see a problem with that. It seems that Barr doesn't seem to be a problem with that. But he was asked the question whether Biden was under investigation. He said no. Okay, why? Well, they got a lot of information on him, but I think they're just letting it be because of the election. But it could be that they're still gathering information to see whether they're going to go after, maybe they're gathering information as they deal with other people being in indictment and piling it up. I don't know how all that works. But the bottom line is once these people are out of the way, they're gone. And we must get rid of these communists, these Marxists that are in our government. They must go. And in order to do that, once we do that, then it should be no problem, because the fact that they are taxing our property means that it's not our property. And it means that if you don't pay the tax, they're going to take it away from you, so you don't own it. And that just cannot be. So again, once we get on the other side, it's a battle that'll be a no-brainer, a downhill battle, if I may say. It won't be an uphill battle once we get courts of justice going. And remember, these kind of arguments or court cases, arguments in the court cases, they're to be decided by the people, not by a judge, but by the people themselves, untainted, where the facts are brought before them, and they make the decision. So the people will decide. These cases will be easily won, no problem. But for that reason, I'm not going to take time with things. I don't have enough time doing what I'm doing as it is. We're all busy, busy. We need more volunteers. We need more people involved. For us to put our time into that wouldn't be serving the cause well. And again, I know it's a problem, but it's a problem that's going, you'll battle that problem and you still won't fix it until you get to the other side, and then we'll fix it over there anyway. And the other side is when we take back the courts. The moment the United States Supreme Court bowls to the people and acknowledges the people's authority and right to control these courts of law and to open these courts of law back up in every single county across America, that's the state courts and the federal district courts particularly, but also the state courts. Okay, once that happens, then we're going to have courts of justice, and things could go very, very quickly. I can imagine how they're going to try. We have a case going through the courts right now. It's been moved into the federal court against YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and I forget the other one. I can imagine, I know people said to me it's going to take years to go. No, it's not going to take years to go through that. It's a cut and dry. It could be heard in one day, settled and done. They don't want it that way. But that's going to be the argument. And that's what's going to happen when we go down to the hearing, because they're forcing a hearing that's going to take place in the Southern District of New York. And anybody that could make it to that hearing should make it to that hearing and write an affidavit on that, on what they hear in that courtroom. But we are going to make the argument straight, clear out. This is a common law court. It has nothing to do with any judge making any decisions. So if that judge thinks that they're there to make some kind of a summary judgment or any kind of a decision or to apply any of their rules, whether it be Rule 12 or Rule 4, you know, no, you can't. I mean, is it 2 or 4? I don't know why I'm confused on that. I think it's Rule 2. But look, they have no business in a court of law. It's for the people to decide, not for you. And that's the point we're going to make. And that's going to be the first argument. And there's no reason to take this case for 5 years or 10 years. This case can be decided in less than a day. The evidence we have, you know, there's so much evidence, but, you know, the evidence we have is far more than enough to make the point and prove the case, okay? And they can't defend themselves against it. Matter of fact, they've already agreed to it in the sense of many statements they have made and things that they have said, not inside the court, but in general, that's written and recorded. It's in news. You have them actually literally saying it, and they're recorded saying it. Things that will condemn them, and, you know, they think they can get away with it. They think they understand the law because they have fancy lawyers that spend, and they spend a lot of money and tie people up in courts and eventually get it thrown out because they maintain the status quo. But no, this is a one-day thing. No problem, no-brainer, easy. You read the papers, it's a no-brainer. You bring it to the people, they can understand it. There is no defense against it. We'll give them the day to try to make their defense, but they won't be able to. They'll only sink themselves deeper. That's all they'll do, and the case will end. So we're not going to permit them to drag this case over, you know, the years. And there's other cases we have. There's an IRS one that we're working on, and some other things. So, you know, the court system, we need to take it back. And it needs a court of law is run by the people. Common law is always by the people, never by the king, other than the king of the court, of course, which is God. And but no political animal belongs in that court to take any control. You know, you can have a U.S. attorney, or you can have on a county level a county attorney, a prosecutor, whether it's county, whatever, and they come in to make the case. You know, against the individual being charged, well, that's fine. But as far as the judge is concerned, they're just a traffic cop. They're just there to make sure things go through. They're an administrator. It's called a magistrate. Every judge is a magistrate. Why is every judge a magistrate? Every judge is a magistrate is because they're qualified to sit in both courts of law and courts of equity. That's why they're a magistrate. They can sit in a court of law. Magistrates can only sit in courts of equity. They cannot sit in the court of law, okay? And they're not qualified to do so. But a magistrate will then just move the case along, okay? And let me reverse what I just said. A magistrate sits in the court of law to move the case along. They don't sit in courts of equity, I don't think, because they don't have the ability to judge as a judge. They're magistrates. So, in any event, they get only to act as a traffic cop, make sure things move along. They're administrators. At the end of the day, they take the will of the jury. They make sure it's put down on paper correctly and properly. And all they do is they make sure that's the will of the jury. And if it's the will of the jury, their seal and signature goes on to it, goes out for execution by the sheriff. And that's it. That's the only involvement that these people have. They cannot make summary judgments, with few exceptions. They can make a summary judgment on a default. Matter of fact, you don't even need the judge to make that summary judgment. You write an affidavit of default and file it with the clerk. They have to seal it, and they have to file it, and you take it to the judge with your paperwork to execute your wherefore clause and say, I need your signature on this, judge. He can't even back out of it. He has to give it to you. It's done. Now, they have refused it, and they will continue to refuse those kind of things. They'll argue and debate them, but they're operating unlawfully. All right, next question.
Okay, I have a very good friend who is going through a divorce, and I have two questions. some background. He filed his counterclaim on August 6th, 2020, in the same court, State Family Division, 10th District Court in Minnesota, that he was originally served from. The counterclaim followed the template found on NLA for barring jurisdiction related to a Nisi Prius court. We left the case number line blank, hoping they would create a new case number. They did not. They accepted the filing as a motion. I was not with him at the time. The counterclaim in summary said, proceed according to the common law or dismiss. We did not put a deadline date that they needed to meet in the counterclaim. On 8-7-20, the opposing party's attorney filed a motion. Nothing in that motion dealt with the personal jurisdiction challenge. The judge denied the opposing party's motion, but scheduled a hearing for 8-27-20. We assumed to deal with the personal jurisdictional challenge. In a letter to the wife's attorney, dated 8-13-20, we gave them until 8-20-20 to deal with the counterclaim personal jurisdiction challenge, or we would order the Nisi Prius Court to dismiss. The opposing party has not responded to us or the court in relation to the personal jurisdiction challenge as of today, which is the 24th. On 8-21, we filed a motion to dismiss. We have not heard from the court or the opposing party as of today. First question, what court should we have filed the counterclaim in? And two, should we attend the scheduled hearing on 8-27-20 before the personal jurisdiction challenge has been decided on?
Well, first of all, I didn't hear the words court of record used. I heard the word, only the word common, common law. And common law, you know, they are taught in bar school, they are taught that common law is a collection of court decisions. So there's no one to argue against it, or they agree with you. You're just, this person is thinking common law means one thing, and the judge and the lawyers are interpreting it into another thing. So there's no argument there, and they're going to continue. And that's why they set another date, and we're going to move on. That's number one. You know, you have to use certain words. First of all, if I was challenging like that, I'd use natural law instead of common law. I might use common law and then say also known as natural law, or define it as being natural law, number one. Number two, they're proceeding according to rules. And rule two is, you know, that's something you have to address, is the fact that they're null and void in this court. This court proceeds according to the rules of the common law, not the rules of the court, which is not even an equity court. It's a civil law court. You're in Babylon. You're in a civil law court. And so far, I heard no words used that takes them out of that. You have to use words like court of record. You got to define natural law, and you're not looking for. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided, okay? And most likely, the judge in that court believes they got jurisdiction, so they're going to decide for them. And I would wait to let that judge tell me that first, only to then at that point pounce on him, and they have to refuse themselves. Because first of all, they're biased, and they would be responding like this person said. They didn't even get an answer from the other side, and that'll always be the case, and because they didn't even understand what you're talking about, and so since there was no other side responding, the judge has no choice but to agree with you, but only if it's written properly. But it's not written properly. At least I haven't heard any words that would tell me it's written properly. So you're going to lose unless you get the right words in there and then make the right position. Allow the judge to hang himself by making a decision by hearing your side, which should be by affidavit form, which rules the court, and therefore the judge must rule in your favor. Let me repeat that. The judge must rule in your favor because there's no affidavit rebutting it from the other side. And so when he gets up there or she gets up there and says, I have jurisdiction, I made the decision, well, judge, you know, first of all, it has to be heard. And if you're hearing it, then you must decide for me. And since you're not deciding for me, you, first of all, you got to recuse yourself. This needs to go to the next court above for that decision to decide on whether they have jurisdiction or not. But I would allow the judge to make that decision first and show them that they're biased and show them that they're in error first. Or, who knows, maybe they realize and recognize it. That would be rare, but you'd have to word it the right way. But again, that proves bias right there if there's nothing coming from the other side and they rule for the other side when the other side hadn't said nothing. They were quiet. So I don't hear the proper words to bring them into a court of record or to a proper common law court. Let's call it a natural law court. And again, in the courts, I would call it natural law. I would try to use the word common law very, very rarely. Next question.
Okay. I live.
By the way, the next book I write, I want to make that clear. And I may not have, well, you know, it's kind of a problem because I'll be writing that book with what's going on in the courts today, and things will change tomorrow once we get to the other side. The other side being that we've won and got into the courts and taken control, and some of this stuff is not needed anymore. So I'll have to think on how I got to write that. But I got to write something on that and make sure I lay it out so that people understand that kind of a position. But next question.
Okay, this is the last question. I live in Harrisburg. Who would be interested in a county and state meeting? This person wants to get the Campaign for Constitutional Sheriff information meeting going.
Okay. Well, first of all, the Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs, I don't know necessarily. Well, if you have a meeting, you should definitely bring it up and get people to participate and talk about it. And I'm sure we can do a short PowerPoint on it. But actually, if you go to, if you go to our front page, let's go to our front page, take a look at it right now. Am I sharing the desktop, by the way? Is this being shared?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You go to our front page and click on. We have a 7-minute video right here. Right here explains what we're doing. Okay. But if you go and click on donate to save the Republic, what did we have worded? Let me go back and see how we have it. Donate to Save Our Republic to NLA's Campaign for Constitutional Sheriffs. So you click on that button there. And everything you need to know to talk to people about this is right here on this page. And there's a 7-minute video that you can show. Also, you can go through read through and talk about the different items covered in this particular book, which is Government by Consent. Give some basic information on the book itself, some book details, you know. The retail price, by the way, I forgot to mention this, and I didn't know this until after last Monday. I found out on Tuesday or Wednesday. The book is going to be retailed at $48.95. I was thinking it would be like $29.95, and we'd sell it to $39.95. It would cover tax, shipping, and handling, and so on. But with $48.95, that kind of lifts our profit up a little bit. So I'm thinking $50 for only $1.05 more. Well, we can cover the tax and the shipping and handling. There may be a way to reduce the price of this book, and I'll be talking with my publisher in the next couple of days, and I'm going to go through some of these details to see if we can get this book lowered in price. But right now, that's where it's at. Instead of $39 or $40, it's going to be $50, and it will cover, of course, tax and shipping and handling. But anyway, the information, Dorrance Publishing Company is the publisher. They're well-known. They've been around for over 100 years. Matter of fact, it's 100 year right now that they've been around. And also, it's a well-known book. I was talking to my wife. She belonged to a book club a while back, and that was one of the major publishers. So it's a good publisher we have. Gives the book dimensions, okay. Point size for the print. Pages, about 1,000 pages. It's a paperback, and it's a full cover. It's going to be black and white. I could have done color on some of the pictures in there, but I did everything black and white to keep the price down, because we do have some different pictures in there. But you go through the table of contents, okay, government by consent, the law, American history, grand jury and pettigrew, and the history of the sheriff. Now, if you notice, we have a lot of stuff on the sheriff here, okay, because really we need to educate our sheriff, and people need to be educated on the power and the authority of the sheriff also as much as the sheriff. But it also covers everything about the grand jury and the pettigrew. It gets into American history, okay, law, the difference between law and equity and law. We discussed that in a chapter. We get into the courts, how the courts work, how they're structured, the jurisdictions, introduction to the founding documents, which, of course, is we have three major founding documents, the Declaration of Independence. But we start off looking at the Declaration of Independence as being America's foundation and our founding fathers from slavery into enlightenment. And this is huge because our founding fathers didn't create slavery in the colonies. They were born into it. And they come in life, you know, you grow up and you see things in life, you get experience, you start to realize, hey, this is wrong. Our founding fathers thought that way. All of them, okay? There might have been one or two here or there because we did have a problem with two states. I think it was Virginia and Carolina, but I don't remember. I forget which states. It's two states that we had a problem with the slavery. But anyway, our founding fathers, they were enlightened. They studied the Enlightenment of the 1600s and took it. That was the early Enlightenment, and they brought it to the High Enlightenment. You know, they took that and realized that slavery is wrong. So it was structured in the Declaration of Independence. And it was much stronger than what we read, but they kind of watered it down a little bit. And even with watering down, it's still strong, but they had to do it to save the Union, I think they believed. Again, two states there was a major problem with. Personally, I think if I was there, I would have argued the point, let the other two states go. Let's do the right thing. Our blessings would be greater. And I believe we are cursed because of slavery and abortion. That's why we are a cursed people. And we perish for lack of knowledge. And, of course, that Bible verse is really talking about lack of knowledge in God. But on the physical side of things, lack of knowledge of government by consent, being God's people, being blessed with his liberty and blessed with this republic that we have, and yet we're ignorant to it. We perish because of that, too. So on the political side or the physical side, we perish for lack of knowledge just as much as we perish for lack of knowledge on the spiritual side. And, of course, the more important part is the spiritual side. But we then get into, what our founding fathers' positions were on slavery, the arguments, and, you know, what Washington thought, what Benjamin Franklin thought, what Thomas Jefferson thought, what Madison thought, okay? All these people, they were against the slavery, and it was built into our system to get rid of it. And Lincoln recognized that and referred back to that fact that he was able to use what they gave him, and it was time. I've heard all my life, most of my life, that the Civil War wasn't about slavery. But ultimately, at the core, it was about slavery. It was about the economy. It was about the slavery. You can't get away from it. And people say, some people will make, it just happened to be, and, you know, that was used at the end of the war. That's not true. But in any event, going back to this, you know, there's a lot of things in here, and you can talk about these things in a meeting on the importance of this book, of what it teaches. Okay, it goes from article to article throughout the Constitution. Of course, as I mentioned, the Declaration of Independence, and then it gets into the Bill of Rights. And it talks about the committee men, the militia, and then we have memorandums of law, which are very powerful. And also, it is a memorandums that you can use in your court cases. These could be, or even just cutting pieces of information out of those memorandums and using your court case. We also have in here a plan to save the Republic and in the appendix. Now, it's in the appendix where I can make the pages, you know, maybe take some pages out. But I felt that these were pretty important, and right now they're in there. But I'm going to see if there's much money to be saved by taking the appendix out. But if we do, if we do take the appendices out, then I'm not sure how many pages, but I'm sure it'll probably be a couple of hundred pages maybe, or close to it. And I don't know if the cost factor is worth it. So it's a decision to be made. At this point, I'm leaning towards leaving them in there. But we can refer to them in our website, because if you go on, which I don't think we show it here. No, we don't. We don't show it. If you go to, let me think here. Let's, okay, I can't get to it right now, I don't think. Let me see. Well, I'm not going to go into it now, but there is more. We refer to a lot of things that are on our website. Okay, so we have the Federalist Papers, for instance. I didn't want to put the Federalist Papers in there. You know, it's quite a few pages. And then the Anti-Federalist Pages. But we do have them on our website. And in our book, it lists the place and the location on the website where you can go and read those papers. And also the audio. We have audio with that, so you can listen and read at the same time. So we got quite a few audio books that we refer to from the book. So it's a lot more than what's in the book. It's also our website because we locate lots of different things. Maybe I'll try to, matter of fact, next week maybe I'll do a quick show on that particular thing, you know, on laying out the different things that we refer to from the book. So the book covers a lot and then refers to a lot on our website. Okay, so the key thing, though, is getting people to buy the book for their sheriff. That's the key thing. So that's the plan. And you can also read the preface, or the preface. I believe it's pronounced preface. Right here, you can click to read the preface. And this is the preface of the book. It's 15 pages. And I posted this because, you know, if you're looking at a book, or one of the things you do if you're deciding whether you're going to buy the book or not, you know, you look at the introduction or the preface. And if it draws you in, that's what's going to make you buy the book. And I do believe that this preface will interest the reader enough to want that book, or to realize they got to get this book into the sheriff's hands. So we give a really good synopsis of the book in the preface. And so, again, this is something that you can share at a meeting if you want to do it then. But we do have a plan on how to organize your county right here under People's Duty. You click on that, and here's the plan on organizing your county and at what point in time you want to do certain things or approach the sheriff and so on and so forth, and how to approach the sheriff, which is a paper I still need to write, and with the book now coming out, it might be a little easier to write because we'll make reference to that book. But you really have to prime your sheriff, because most sheriffs don't know the Constitution. They don't know what to do. They refer to the county attorney usually when they have a legal question, when they shouldn't be doing that. This is their job. They're the constitutional officer, not that bar attorney sitting in the county. That's not the constitutional officer. They are. They're the ones that swore to uphold and defend the Constitution. So they need to know the Constitution. They need to know the history around it. They need to understand these things. This book is critical for our salvation as a nation. And I'm serious about that. This book is critical for our salvation as a nation. I mean, maybe someone else has put a book out that will suffice too, but I'm not aware of it, if it exists. I'm not aware of any organization doing what we're doing. We are offering full understanding and knowledge of government by the consent, and how we the people can have it, and how we can save the Republic and keep it safe and be as free as we ever were, at liberty as far as we ever were. But it's not going to happen if the people expect to be ignorant and free. They expect what never was and never will be. And we quote that enough. We know that's Thomas Jefferson. And he's absolutely right. You can't have liberty without knowledge of it, where it comes from, how it works, what it is. You can't have it. I mean, I remember researching, as I was researching and finding all these golden tidbits and, you know, all these precious stones or sentences and words and things, they were all new to me. And I sit back often and say, I couldn't know that without looking into it. And we're looking from the shoulders. We stand on the shoulders of great men. They've given us all, they've put all this knowledge out there. All we did is bring it together. That's what this book does, is it brings all that information together. And that's what our website does. And it's all necessary to have government by consent. You cannot be ignorant of it. You know, we're getting people to become administrators for the juries in every county, four people, but they have to be educated. They have to be instructed. There has to be certain regulations. We'll call them regulations. But there has to be uniform regulations or policies and procedures, or procedures maybe is a good word, that we have to agree to. They're sensible and logical. They're self-evident. These regulations must be, or these procedures must be self-evident. So when you look at them, yeah, it makes sense. It should. Yeah, we got to do that. Yeah, we got to have that person. Yeah, we got to be careful there. Yeah, we can't say that. Yeah, we need to do this. You know, and that's a that particular that's another handbook that we're writing. We've got three handbooks written, but that's a fourth handbook, and I got to get them hopefully published shortly. But anyway, there's a fourth handbook that's in writing, and that's on a handbook for administrators, period. And that's for the procedures and, you know, how to orientate the juries, how we got to be careful not to taint the juries, how we got to be careful to watch that nobody else taints the juries. I mean, there's a lot of things to cover on that. And it's probably going to be maybe a 30-page handbook, roughly speaking. And it'll give a lot of details on procedures and, you know, how to do things and how things work. But I'm sure we'll miss things, and that's where National Liberty Alliance will always be here to try to answer those things that we do miss and research what we don't know so that we can get that information out and that we're all acting in the same way, uniformly. The militia needs to be restructured from the ground up. We the people can do that. We have a plan for that. And there needs to be a uniform process of how the militia is set up and how things work. And they have to be agreeable. They have to be, you know, they have to be common law in the sense that they have to be self-evident truths. In other words, how we set this up. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's got to be done that way. We have to explain sometimes when it's a little confusing, explain why it should be that way, and it should be, again, common sense. It's what it is all about. Payne's common sense. Okay, next question. Well, where are we?
No, that was the last question, John.
Last one. Okay. All right. Anyway, I guess through this I've talked enough about the book, so I don't have to go any further than that. Gerard, are you here, ready to take control of the board?
Yeah, I got a couple of current event items before we go.
Sure, go right ahead.
He's there. Actually, I want to share my screen for a minute.
Yeah, let me stop sharing mine, and you can share yours, and then let me know when you're ready, and I'll introduce Brent and pass you the board. But
okay, I got a couple items to
stop sharing. I think I'm stopped sharing now.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, people should be aware of some of these things, because there's a lot of stuff going on, and let me see, what do we want here? My desktop, I would guess. Let's see, video. I'm going to say desktop, okay.
Down, you know where I had to share when you click the button there?
I am, but I don't know. I got to pick this out. Let's see, because it's on another... I should just share my screen, right? Why do I got to pick all this gold baloney?
If you click on share, click on the share button there, then.
Yeah, then it says select items to share. Well.
Yeah, you just click whatever you want people to see, and then click start sharing.
Let's see if I can get it up here. Okay, I don't know if you're. Are you seeing this screen yet here? This
yep, I see it.
Okay, so this is something that's going on right now as we speak. It's a YouTube video. I'm not going to play it all. It's the federal, it's a media blackout, the federal court case to end water fluoridation. Very, very important. They've been fluoridating our water for years. It causes cancer. It causes dumbing down, causes lower IQs, causes all kinds of stuff. We've been talking about this for years.
We may not be able to hear the audio on that, but try it and we'll see what happens.
Well,
I think you have to upload it to get it to play, but I don't know.
Well, the main thing I want to show is the YouTube heading before they take this down. I'm going to try to capture this video so we can put it up on our
website.
Open
it up because we don't see it yet.
Oh, wait a minute. How come it's not showing what's on my desktop? No, I don't want to show the desktop. Hang on a minute. Media. Oh, here it is. I see it. I'm sorry. Let's get rid of my desktop. And let's...
We'll just open it up and make it fill the whole desktop. Did you click on everything to be able to see it? Yep, there you go. We see it.
Can you see it?
Yep. See if see if we can hear the audio.
I don't even hear the audio. Wait a minute. Can you hear it?
Nothing yet.
Okay, wait a minute. I see why. I know why, too. Hang on. Because... Come on, get out of there. It should come out of the same thing for this. Can you hear it now?
No, I don't think we're going to hear it, because I think you have to upload it to do that on the broadcaster. And I'm not sure whether you can upload videos on the broadcaster. If we can't, we should check in to see how we can share a video.
Okay, it would have been nice to play a couple of seconds of this, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I want to make people aware of this, and let me fill the screen with this. Because you could... We'll read the... Can you still see the video?
Yeah, if you go to the on the bottom of the video, go back up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You want to scroll down and read that stuff. Okay, go ahead.
That's right. I want
but hit that little zero between the minus. Yeah, there you go. Give us the full screen.
Okay, well, I think that's the best I can do with it right there. Anyway, I'll read it quick because you might not be able to see it real well. It says, as we are inundated with headlines about violent riots and looting being passed off as mostly peaceful protesters, or how the dreaded virus continues to spread in communities around the world, there's another story taking place which directly affects hundreds of millions of people globally as being blacked out by the mainstream corporate media. Unlike the aforementioned crisis, which are cited as a justification for World Economic Forum's Great Reset, the public health crisis actually has a rather simple solution: to end the water fluoridation by no longer adding toxic substances to the nation's water supply. You would think this would be a straightforward process, considering the mountains of study which conclude fluoride is harmful neurotoxin attributed to lower IQs and ADHD. Unfortunately, the government regulatory agencies have been not only defending this practice for generations, they champion the forced medication as a great achievement in medical history. Right now, and in perhaps one of the most important trials of our time, the Fluoride Action Network is taking the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, head-on in an unprecedented court case that would lead to the end of water fluoridation in the U.S. and possibly worldwide, as other nations would likely follow suit. In this interview, Spiro is joined by Dr. Paul Connett of Fluoride Action Network to discuss the current court case against the EPA and water fluoridation, as the first week of the trial has come to an end, and the second, possibly final week, is about to begin. Now, they got the Fluoride Action Network here. They got a thing, link and times to watch the trial live, which would be interesting. And then there's the interview with Dr. Paul Connett. Very important. You don't realize how bad fluoride is. They've duped everybody. I don't have it because I have well water. But anybody that lives in a municipality, they have probably 98% of all the municipal water supplies with fluoride in it. All the hip replacements being done today, that's probably a result of fluoridation in the water, because it causes the bones to become brittle. It models the teeth. It makes the teeth strong. That's baloney. The only study that they ever did is when they put external fluoride on the teeth, it does make the enamel harder, but eventually they crumble. They get so hard they crumble. So, but other than that, it does all. It's a neurotoxin, and it causes low IQs, and it causes docility. You wonder why people don't get up and do anything. Well, guess what? Fluoride water is a big reason why you can't get people excited, because it's a chemical frontal lobotomy. It really is. So I don't. Hey, well, John, is your water fluoridated?
Well, yeah, it is, but I don't drink it. I get bottled water.
Yeah, because it's bad. I was going to say, how come you're such a radical if your water's fluoridated?
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's that one. And the other one I want to make people aware of is over here, this one. See, this one I would really like to play the a couple of minutes of it. This is about Manera, who is doing the vaccination, and it talks about Fauci and Gates and Soros and how they're tied together, and Epstein, and how they were all in school together, and how the IB Farben company, who was tied in with the Nazis, Soros took over and then broke it up. Bayer Aspirin and IB Farben and all that, and he made it into the Manera Corporation, and that's the one that's making the vaccine for this pandemic. And this is, let me see, I don't know if you can, it doesn't let me scroll.
Yeah, it's a blank page for us right now.
Oh,
we don't
sorry.
See nothing.
I wonder how come it's, why didn't it share?
You're not sharing it, maybe. Go back to your share and click on the button that has this one.
Hang on a minute.
And you really, if you click the everything, whatever you open up should be able to be shared then.
Oh.
Go to your share button down on the bottom.
Does it say, yeah, automatically share this application? I got to pick all this stuff?
You click the one box on the top that sort of shifted to the left, and it clicks them all.
Oh, there you go. Gotcha. Okay.
And then click share. There you go. Now you're sharing everything. So whatever you're on your desktop is going to be shared now.
So that's this video here, and anyway, it's off of Facebook. That's a problem. Anyway, it's a video that, and actually, if you come up here with this Facebook thing, I think maybe I'll send that out later.
Send me a copy of that, and I'll put it up on the website. The problem is, it's got to be the YouTube, and I should, because the YouTube one, you should be able to find YouTube and watch it on YouTube by clicking the YouTube button on the bottom right hand corner.
The other thing I could do is I can have Ollie put it onto Video Sanctuary, and then you could put the link out, and they could click on it and go on there.
Yeah, there's BitChute or something like that that there's videos on, and Carl's looking into it to be able to post videos from there, because you shared me a couple of videos. I wanted to post them, but I couldn't because they're not YouTubers, and they don't post the same way. I tried numerous things, and Carl says that they don't have anything set up, but he might be able to set something up, so he's working on that. So any kind of when you got a video that is on a different platform other than YouTube, we have to find out how to be able to share that. Now, if we put it into our YouTube or what is Ollie working on? What's it called?
Ollie's got a site called Video Sanctuary that he can put them up on.
Okay, so then we have to be able to figure out how to show videos from Video Sanctuary on our website where we can post them and embed them.
Right.
I don't know.
But the very least we could do is we could put the URL out that people could click on and go.
Yeah, you can. If you give them to Jan, he can include that on the newsletter. And
now
you
this
know, give
scenario
a,
video,
give a sentence
it's only
two.
4 minutes long. I mean, it's so easy to watch, and it's very upsetting just to hear the evidence that they throw forward with these guys, how they're in bed together, and what they're doing. And it's
well, that's the national anthem we're watching now.
I know, but I can't. See, it came in off of this thing here, so I can't.
I talked with last time. I talked with those people. What's the name of the program we're using? We're using Start Meeting. Last time I talked with them, they said that there was no way to share a video yet. But they do have the MP3 download and upload. They have the downloads off of, like when we recorded, we got the ability to download them in MP3 or MP4, MP4 being video. And I'm wondering if they set it up yet where we can upload an MP4 instead of an MP3 and then run it through the broadcaster. Now, I don't know if they're set up that way, and if they are, then we'll be able to share videos. But if we share videos, we do want to do just segments. We don't want to do the whole period of time on a long video or anything like that.
Right. Anyway, it would have been nice to show this for 4 minutes, but we'll get it maybe next week. I want to make people aware of that. And see, the trouble is these Facebook videos, they got them locked up pretty bad. I have figured out how to get them to Ollie and been able to show them, but I don't know why people post them like that. You know, Facebook has very big control over them, and then what they do is they delete them. They censor them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's any good. So those are the two items I wanted to... Let me
experiment with something here. Are you done with sharing your screen? Are we ready to move on?
Yes.
I just want to share something real quick. There may be a way to get around that, and I'll show you that in a minute. Let me share my screen for a minute.
Yeah, I stopped my share. Should have stopped.
Okay. So let me share my screen. Tell me if you can... Now, this because this is inside the browser here, let's see... Tell me if you can hear this.
Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest.
Can you hear that?
It's low, but I can hear it. Turn it up. Turn up your sound.
Well, I can't. You'll have to turn up your sound.
Oh, wait. Let me try it. Let me just see. Keep it playing and I'll turn up my sound.
President Pro Tem of the North Carolina State Senate, Bill Durbin.
It's kind of low.
That may be coming through my mic. Let me cover my mic. Tell me if the voice goes away. Do you hear it now?
No, not really. I hear
okay,
it.
Okay, it was coming through my mic.
That's
I mean, I could put it up on my speakers if I had speakers on. But
yeah, there's got to be something better we can do with that.
Yeah.
You know. All
right, let me share something real quick, and then we'll move over to Brent. Because I was talking about the table of contents for the book. And this is the table of contents I got for the book that you've seen most of it already on the page. But there is a section after the appendix, or the appendices, I guess they pronounce it. After the appendices, we have a lot of information. You know, the following free course materials, PDF books, audio books can be found on National Liberty Alliance website. And then we give the actual location of different things. Here's the course, here's the civics course, the militia, trial by jury by Lysander Spooner. Okay, that's audio and you have the in the PDF book form.
I'm going to copy
Federalist
that
because
I have trouble finding this stuff on NLA. Just let me right to it. The site
I'll send
is
you,
something.
Buy the book.
Yeah,
and,
pretty
but I'll drop, we need it for our sheriffs. And look at the other thing we do need to hit 5,000 or 6,000 books to sell before we go into release of the book. And the release of the book, you know, my contract talks in December, but they promised me that they're going to work hard to try to get it done by November. And so our target is November. And if I can collect enough money and pay the whole thing, because I still owe him another $5,500, so if we collect enough money on that, then I can pay that off, and then I could use that as a leverage that might encourage them to say, okay, we're going to get it done by November. So it's important that we try to get it done by November, but it's also important that we sell 5,000 to 6,000 books. If we sent 3,000 books to 3,000 sheriffs, and if people buy a book at the same time, that's 6,000 books. So we get 5,000 or 6,000 books. That puts us into a position on being on bestsellers. Now, I did get an email from someone who told me that they play around with that stuff and they're not clear on how to really get onto it. But generally, that's kind of the idea, that you want to sell X amount of books so that when it goes off to publishing, okay, when they approach, because they will solicit my book to, you know, Barnes and Nobles and many, many book outlets.
Yeah, Amazon,
okay?
And all that.
And if they solicit it saying that, hey, you know, 6,000 books have already been sold, pre-ordered before this thing even came, that's something that could ring a bell and get us into that bestsellers. But the key thing is getting into the books, whether bookstores, the chains, even. And if you're in the chains, I don't know that every book in the chain is a bestseller.
Well, there's more than one bestsellers list. There's the Times bestseller.
Yeah, there's lots of them, yes.
There's other ones. So, there's some of them that are like the premier bestseller. Everybody looks at the Times bestseller list. I don't know why they are sucky.
So this campaign is trying to get this book onto bestsellers lists, number one. Get them into all of the major outlets, number two. Okay. I'm now sending, I'm going to send some of our paperwork now. I'm going to be sending to different news outlets. I was going to, Sean Hannity is one of them. But there are others, more alternative news that I'm trying to get some of our paperwork out to, try to get them to be looking over here to see what we're doing. But look, we need to get the books into the hands of the sheriffs. We need to hit critical mass. A book on a bestsellers list, which would direct a lot of people to the site, and a small percentage of those people, or a percentage of those people, will join up and participate. Okay, and that's how we're going to hit critical mass. I mean, there are many ways to hit critical mass, and I never thought about using the book until we got the book and I'm negotiating and seeing how I can get this thing published and realizing that the book can cause us to go into critical mass. So our goal is to sell between 5,000 to 6,000 books, number one, while doing that to get a book into the hands of every single sheriff in America. Okay, and we have Sheriff Dar, who agrees to write a letter for us that we're going to insert into the book. So it'll be a personal letter from sheriff to sheriff introducing the book. And of course, Dar is working on really gathering together many sheriffs, and he's willing to work out. And his goal, ultimately, is to do a nationwide thing, getting sheriffs working together nationwide to get them educated, get them to become constitutionally minded. So we already have some sheriffs working with us. He's not the only one, but he's the guy leading this thing. And so we have that. So we're getting sheriffs educated. We're getting people educated. We're getting the potential of getting onto the bestsellers list and thereby pushing forward the critical mass, and we need critical mass. You know, we got almost 9,000 members now, but we need that hit where we get critical mass, and I think we could be close to that. If all 9,000 members were more involved and were sharing this with other people, in a month we can have double that. You know, we can have 18,000 members. And again, double that too, you know, every month, if people were really sharing and pushing our website and telling them of the importance of what we're doing. We cannot save America without a proper education. We must have that proper education. But anyway, let me move on so I can push over to Brent. Just real quick, some of the things. The following free PDF books are available at National Liberty Alliance, and we give the location where you can get these books. Free common law documents are available, and we give the location where these documents could be gotten, the 13th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, the Anti-Federalist, the Bill of Rights, the Common Law Handbook, the Confederate Handbook, Thomas Jefferson quotes, Thomas Jefferson on politics, lots of stuff, Washington quotes, and so on. We also have free law dictionaries are available. We got Beauvoir's, we got Black's. We were stopped from sharing Black's law, by the way, about 2 years ago. But then it went past the protective time, and now we can share them and, you know, give it away for free. So Black's Law is now available up on our website, has been for about 6 months now again. We have biographies, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, We have autobiographies, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson. We got the harmony of the Gospels. Look at anybody who wants to do a real Bible, good Bible study, non-denominational, powerful, one of the most powerful studies that I ever done. We have it on our website. It's in audio. They're like 20, 25 minutes long, each part of it. And it's a harmony of the Gospel, working through the Gospel of Mark and harmonizing Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and pulling in tremendous amounts of Scripture all over the Bible in order to understand and interpret some of these things. Articles and essays that are available. We give the location. All these essays and articles are available. Anybody who hasn't read Congressman McFadden's speech, a very, very powerful speech that he gave, I think it was in the 30s, and he was, three times they tried to assassinate him, and the last time they were successful because he was revealing the Fed, what was going on. The Cooper file, if anybody hasn't read the Cooper file, how the IRS came into power and authority, we have that up on our website, okay? We have the book, The House of Rothschild, anybody who wants to read through that to see these people, how sick they are. Anyway, we got lots of books and stuff. We then have other documents that are available. The Hidden Agenda video that I was speaking about earlier, which is the Reese Committee. Subversion Factor, Seduction of a Generation, Anarchy. These are all videos, powerful, powerful videos. And most, if not all, of these videos are in our civics course, but they're available. Be able to go to our webpage. Court forms, process, instructions are available, okay, at this page here on the forms. Instructional forms to challenge jurisdiction, instructional forms to move your case, instructional forms, and a lot of this will be in the book, but it'll be more detailed and explained. Moving your court for enforcement, notice and demand, how to write that. So the book has a lot more than 1,000 pages. It refers to our website and gives locations of lots of videos and PDF books and, just tremendous amount of information and stuff. So I did want to share that. This book is important and it's powerful, and it will give you and all of us the proper education we need to have government by consent. Without this proper education, you cannot have government by consent. And again, maybe someone else out there has written things on this also. I doubt anyone's written, on all of the things that we've written on. But nevertheless, I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware that it exists anywhere. And if anybody else is, let me know, because we need to connect with those people and work with them, and they hopefully with us. Okay, with that, I'm going to take away my sharing of the screen. I'll give you back the screen. I want to put our front page up there for now as we move over to Brent. Brent, are you ready? Are you with us? Is Brent here? Did anyone see Brent today?
He's up right underneath you. He's there.
Oh, okay. By the way, Gerard, I was trying to get a hold of you today. I have a radio interview tomorrow at 3 o'clock. I think you should be on it with me. Contact me tomorrow. I'll give you the details.
3 o'clock.
We're coming. 3 o'clock. It's going to be probably 3 hours. It's 2 to 3 hours because you're going to do two segments, two parts at one time, but it'll only be aired one part at a time, so it's pre-recorded. And it's going to be through Zoom. So I just got to give you the Zoom number. Okay?
Yeah, make sure. And you should throw that in my Skype.
Yeah, I don't know if I even have it yet.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that way I got it.
Yeah, the woman Gail asked for a bio, so if you got a bio on it, let's talk about this in the morning. I'll show you the bio I written up.
Okay.
And then you need to write a bio up, and we'll connect it over to her, and she wants to post it. She's making a lot of connections for us back into Drake. We've been with Drake numerous times on his program, and it's usually good results going on his programs because we always get a good response from people. But she's already made contact with that. They posted our book up on Drake's site, and Gail's posted it on her site. And we need to make a list of all of the different places that are supporting us. We should be supporting them too, so giving them access. But we'll have to work a page out for that. Anyway, with that, Brent, are you ready?
Yeah, can you hear me good, John?
We can hear you good.
All good.
Listen, I've been trying to get you over the weekend. I know you've been busy and running around, but I don't know if you had time to read that paper I dropped into your Skype.
Yes, and I'll get back to you as soon as I
can. Yeah, give me a call in the morning or something. Let's talk a little bit. I'd like to get your thoughts. I'm holding it up until I hear from you because you may have some thoughts on it. Okay? All right, let me move on here.
Tomorrow, probably.
Okay.
It won't be in the morning, but it'll be in the morning.
Any time during the day.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'll be in a meeting at 3 o'clock, so after that. Matter of fact, I'll talk with Gail to see if she might want to interview you, and we can connect you with her. That could be good.
Well, thanks, John. No, I'd look forward to that.
Okay. All right. Anyway, Brent Winters, he's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com, and Brent's got the mic, and Gerard, you got the board, right?
Yep. Put the front page up, John. I don't want
everything's
great.
Huh?
Put the front page up while you're at it.
Well, I'm still sharing?
No, I want you to put the front page up, though, so we got a nice page up there.
Oh, I thought you were going to share in case you want to talk and share.
Oh,
otherwise
I
you...
could do that, too, yes. I'll
yeah.
do it. Okay.
Yeah, put it up while Brent's talking, yeah. And you can move around, maybe help Brent out with showing people things or whatever when you talk.
Okay,
so. Okay Brent, right, you got the
fire
mic. Go right ahead.
Okay.
Fire
thank
away.
You.
Fire at will.
Well, first speech I made that had any political impact when I was running for office was in a big high school auditorium, and I was getting ready to go up to where it was, and it was in the bigger town, the biggest town in the district. It was a town of about 60,000 people. It was a big high school auditorium. It was a Second Amendment meeting, and the fellow that run for governor was there, and some other big shots. And I had never spoken to that many people, and I didn't know what to say. I was getting ready to leave the house, and my father was there, and I said, Dad, what do you reckon I ought to say? And he said, well, tell them that the problem with America is it needs more gun control. I said, it needs more gun control? He said, yeah, tell them. He said, tell them about real gun control. Tell them about Stark at Bunker Hill when he walked out in front of the be ragged and beleaguered farmers and craftsmen. And he took a stick and drove it in the ground in front of them and said, don't fire your weapon until the British reach this stick. He said, that's good gun control. And then tell them about Andy Jackson at New Orleans in 18 and 14 when he said, do not fire until you see the whites of their eyes. Of course, he'd mentioned also Captain Parker. Was it Lexington? He also said, do not fire unless fired upon. Well, there's three or four there. And then he said, and also remind them of what Admiral Dewey said at Manila Bay. He said, fire when ready, Gridley. Well, that's really control. That's the kind of gun control he said America needs. And I said it just that way. I didn't say anything else. They gave me time to say a few words. That's all I said. And people responded to it. Matter of fact, they almost tore the house down. I didn't say anything else. I didn't even introduce myself. I didn't know enough to do that. Anybody else might have mentioned what my name was. Well, it's always just the opposite of what people say it is. Usually, I say always well in many cases. And I want to talk a little bit about leadership in America and what the problem is. There's a fundamental problem here. By the way, my comments are my own. I take responsibility for them. Neither John nor Gerard nor Ollie take responsibility. I don't try to put it off on them. This is just Brent talking, as usual. But what's the problem in America? The problem in America is simple. I'm going to read it to you out of the greatest law book ever written. Law. What is law? Law is the way things are, or the way things are going to be, and it will not change, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's law. Here's some law. That which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they, who's they? Well, he's talking about the heathen, the pagans, the lawless, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. I'm reading from King Jimmy's version. They were not thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Watch this one. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Now, this was originally written in Koine Greek. This is a translation, of course, from Koine Greek. The word translated wise there is sophos. Sophos. And the word translated fools is moros. I would put it, professing themselves to be shrewd, they became morons, because that's what moron, moros means. It's a moron's a Greek word. It means moron. It means stupid. It means dullard. It means dull. That's what it means. Professing themselves to be sophos, they became moros. Well, by the way, that's where we get our word sophomore from. Sophomore is a compounded word that forms an obvious contradiction of terms. It's a joke. Sophomore. That means wise fool. That's what he's saying here. They're just professing themselves to be wise. They're nothing but a bunch of fools. They changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like unto a corruptible man. Paintings and statues and birds, four-footed beasts, creeping things. And God gave them up. He abandoned them through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. They changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature. That is some created thing, something God created or they created. Served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause, now watch, God gave them up to vile affections. What are vile affections? Well, the Greek words are obvious, but he goes ahead and defines it here. They change the natural use of that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Men with men working that which is I like the way he puts the translation says, working that which is unseemly. Now, it's worse than that. It's downright ugly, dirty, cruel, vicious. That's what sodomy is. And receiving in themselves the recompense of their error, which was meat. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. To do those things, here he is again using the euphemism, to do those things which are not convenient, yeah, I'd reckon not, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness. This is Paul the Apostle writing to the Romans, the Christian folk in the city of Rome, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. What's this one? He caps it all off. Disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection. Natural affection. They have none. That means just the natural affection that an animal would have for its young. That a mother cat would have for its kittens. They don't have that anymore. Implacable, and he says, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do. They cheer each other on. What's the matter with leadership in America? Well, this is a description of many, many of those who have their bony fingers on the levers of power. They're dangerous. They're ugly. They're vicious. They're sodomites and lesbians. And God says here, through Paul the Apostle, that this is the law of our Maker. He says that God has abandoned their brains. They are reprobate. That's the word he uses. That's a nice way of putting it. The original tongue is much stronger in its delivery of description of these pathetic creatures. Trouble is, they're dangerous. They're real dangerous. Now, there's another fellow. There's an affidavit in the Bible, an affidavit by a man who was the greatest emperor in the world. He gives his witness, his testimony. His name was Nebuchadnezzar, fourth chapter of Daniel, Daniel the prophet. Nebuchadnezzar the emperor, and he writes a decree of his affidavit, again, his testimony of what happened to him. He writes unto all people, nations, and languages. I'm reading from the fourth chapter of the book of Daniel the prophet. Languages, unto all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought good to show you the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. By the way, what I just read to you from Romans chapter 1, you read that in public in Canada and they'll throw you in jail. They've done it. You publish it in the newspaper, they'll prosecute you for a crime and throw you in jail. Or read it publicly on the radio, they'll throw you in jail. That's where Canada has gone. Are we next? Or can we read the Bible in public? If these folk that are pushing get their way, they're going to prosecute people for reading Romans chapter 1 in public. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, he was a big shot. He was the greatest emperor of the world, emperor of the Empire of Babylon. He starts his affidavit. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house, and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Everything was great. He was at ease in his palace. His enemies were not attacking. His kingdom, his empire, seemed to be in perfect order, and all of a sudden he had this dream. And I said, I want all the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, the warlocks, everybody on the government payroll that thinks they're smart. And I told the dream before them, and they did not make known unto me the interpretation. They didn't know what it meant. And at last, Daniel the prophet, the Israelite, came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar. He gave him a Babylonian name. He'd already interpreted one dream for him, so he was so thankful he made him in charge of the whole blasted empire. And he made him master of the magicians. That's the warlocks. That's what they were. Because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, Daniel. See, he's a pagan, but he recognized the spirit of the holy gods, plural, is in thee. Talking about his own gods. Thus the visions of my head on my bed I saw, and behold a tree. It tells him this dream about this tree. And Dan'l says to him, well, I hate to tell you this. Of course, the tree is him, the emperor. And he tells him, I hate to tell you this, but this is not a good thing, because what's going to happen is you're going to go stark raving mad. You're going to get down on all fours, and you're going to crawl out of the palace and eat grass like an ox, and your fingernails grow long like a bird's claws, and you lay down and sleep on the open prairie, and the dew will fall on your body. You'll wake up and shake it off like a dog, because you're going to lose your mind. He thought he was big stuff, walking near the hanging gardens, looking about, and God struck him with absolute madness for 7 years. And he tells himself what happened. And at the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, is this not great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? And while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. And they shall make thee to eat grass like an ox. And 7 times shall pass over thee, that means 7 years, until thou knows that the Most High, until you know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and he gives that power to whomsoever he will, whoever he wants to give it to. How did Obama get into office? Listen, we get what we deserve. We get what we deserve, and God does it. No question about it. He does it. If there's anything clear in the Bible, he's clear on that. Talk about what we're going to do and how we're going to stop them. And no, God's going to do what he's going to do. Our job is to figure out what he's going to do best we can by understanding his revelation and be obedient to him. But the first thing we must do if we're going to be protected from these evil, Brent can't explain this. This is just the way it is. It's law. We get what we deserve. Well, I think the time has come that it may be wise to say, you know, we're not in charge here. And we need to know what we're going to do if all hell breaks loose. Now, I don't know if all hell breaks loose or not. I hope it doesn't. Hope that this Camille Harris, I had a friend send me something. Let me read this. I assume it's true until I find out otherwise. And this is what she said. And once Trump's gone, we have regained our rightful place in the White House. Look out if you supported him and endorsed his actions, because we'll be coming for you next. You will feel the vengeance. Nation, no stone will be left unturned as we seek you out in every corner of this great nation. For it is you, who have betrayed us. Camilla Harris, 18 June 2020. Listen, if these folks get into power, it's bad enough when they're not in power. Government's crazier than bedbugs. You don't know what they're going to do next, running in every direction. Well, Nebuchadnezzar learned what Romans chapter 1 says. You lose your mind, God will abandon your brain. By the way, if God is not with your brain, you're going to be hurt. Okay, we're going to end this with one other case study. This is about a fellow named David, and he became king of Israel. Now here's, well, the sovereignty of God in this passage overwhelms you. You can't figure it out. But he makes it clear that he's behind it all. And the king David said unto Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Israel. This is what the king said, from Dan even to Beersheba. That's from the north of the kingdom, clean down to Beersheba in the south. And number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people. Now, who are the people? Let's review that. It says, our constitution says, we the people. We the people. Who are the people? Every time you see that phrase in the Bible, Ha'am, in the Hebrew text, it means the militia of the 12 several tribes of Israel. And that's what he's talking about here, to number the militia, number the people. When you see the word people in the Older Testament and the Newer Testament, the concept carries over. It's not talking about the gals. It's talking about the guys. And the numbering in Israel from the very beginning when they first came out of Egypt was of the guys, not the gals. Same thing was true, by the way, in America. Same thing was true in America. After our nation started, who were numbered? The men, not the women. For decades, the men were numbered, not the women. Why? Well, the men were the militia, number one, and the men were the ones that handled government matters, held office, and everything revolved around two things, militia and taxes, and that's the reason for the census. There is no other reason for the census, and any other reason that is given is a false, unlawful reason. Well, the same thing was true in the Bible. They numbered the militia, but David wanted to do that. He wanted to do that, and Joab, that was the general officer of the armed forces of Israel, the militia of the 12 several tribes, Joab said unto the king, now the Lord thy God add unto the people. And why, he says, verse 3, doth my lord the king delight in this thing? Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab. He wanted it done. And against the captains of the host, that's the hostile ones, the army, the militia, to be more accurate. And Joab and the captains of the host, that's the armed men, went out from the presence of the king to number the people, that's the militia, of Israel. And they passed over Jordan and pitched in Aroer on the right side of that city, pitched their tents, in the midst of the river of Gad and toward Jazer, and they came to Gilead, and in the land of Tipham Hodish, and they came to Danjon, a lot of places that you would know where they are, verse 7, and they came to the stronghold of Tyre, it's over on the coast up north, and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites, and they went out to the south, they numbered them all. They went throughout the land at the end of 9 months, took them 9 months, it says, and 20 days. And Joab gave up the tally of the number of the people, again the militia, in Israel. It was 800,000 men, able-bodied, to draw the sword. 800,000. And the men of Judah were 500,000. That's over 1 million men. And that's a lot of men. And David's heart smote him. After that he had numbered the people, that is the militia. And David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done, and now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant. He knew he had done something wrong. This thing about taking a census is a sensitive business. And in the Bible, the census was only taken when God said to take it, and he didn't say it that often. And the reason for that is this, because he didn't want anybody to rely upon military might for their safety. He didn't want anybody to rely upon the military might of men for their safety. Who does he want us to trust? He wants us to trust him. Does he want us to have the militia of the several states of the United States? Yes, he does. That's the pattern he gives us in his law, his word. And we have that. Our Constitution lays it out in four distinct militia clauses. But we are not to trust ourselves. We are to trust him, and him alone, him and no other, him and no more. Well, that's not what David. David wasn't doing that. David wanted to know how many men he had that he could put in the saddle, he could give a sword to, so he could feel secure. Well, here's what happened. I'll just tell you the rest in brief. God was ticked The God of Israel was ticked, and he said, "What shall I do unto you that you've done this?" And he said to David, "I'll give you three choices of what I'll do to you." Three choices. And David said, "I won't take any of them. I'll just put myself and my nation in your hands to do what is just." Well, what'd he do? He slew quite a few Israelites. That's what he did. And he destroyed who? The people. He slew them by the thousands. Not the women, not the children, but the militiamen, the people. That's what it says in verse 16. Destroyed the people. And David prayed to God that he would withhold his destruction. 70,000 men, it says, verse 16 or 15 of the 24th chapter of 2 Samuel. And there died of the people from Dan, that's up in the north, that's the north end of the nation, to Beersheba, the Well of Oaths, that's in the south, 70,000 men. Did David die? No. Was David at fault? Yes. But watch me close here. It's up to the people. We, the people of the United States, it's up to us to say no to the king. It's up to us to say no to government. And they did not do that, and they lost their lives. Well over a million of them, but 70,000 of them God slew just to remind them who they were supposed to trust. You say, well, that's the Old Testament. Well, it's worse now. How do I know? The book of Hebrews in the Newer Testament says so. How much more so? How much more so, says the writer to the Hebrews, now, with our full understanding of the coming, of Jesus Christ, will God not tolerate our lack of trust? And the message, I think, that's important to us, and I have stressed this before, and I'll stress it again, the gals aren't the problem. The gals aren't the problem. You see this over and over and over in the written revelation of God. No. Starting with our grandpa Adam in the Garden of Eden. No, the men are the problem. The men. God charges them with setting the example of trust in him. And that's what happened in Israel. The government, that's David, moved to do these things at his command. They went out and did it, and they didn't say no. Now, are you saying no? Are you just saying, well, nothing I can do? I'm looking for a political solution. There is no political solution. There is no political solution. There never has been. The defense of a nation is trust in the maker of all things. And if we have that, then all of the rest of the things in politics and all that will fall in place. But if we don't have that, it won't. God tells us over and over again to trust him. And whoever you trust for your defense is your master. Do you trust DJ Trump? Do you trust the United States Army? Do you trust the Sheriff's Department? If you do, if you're that dumb, they will be your master. Your protector, who you take for your protector, is your master. Well, that's what happened. That's the problem. It's happened over and over again in history. Our country is here because of the hand of God, not because of our military might. We didn't have any. What, 1,500 men, 1,200 men when they came out of Valley Forge against an army of tens of thousands? And we still drove them out of our country. God says he'll do that for people that trust him. 10,000 will flee from one man, he says. But if you're not trusting God, you'll lose your mind. And you'll become with the wicked, and you'll flee when no man even pursues. Well, this is Brent, Alan Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Join us on Saturdays. join us on Saturdays. You can see how to join us there on the website, commonlawyer.com. We're teaching a class on due process on Saturday morning. And you can see how to participate there. And Gerard, if you're there, thank you so much for allowing me a little time. We'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. And only got a couple people in the queue. We still have a little time left, so if anybody else wants to get in, feel free. We got Montana Dan. I'm going to open you up. Go ahead, Montana Dan.
Sorry about the noise. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that was me.
Okay.
Is that better?
Yes, much.
Yeah, I'm the one that sent that thing about the voting thing.
Yes.
And I really appreciate what John and all you folks are doing, especially with the new book. But quite often we hear about getting stuff for the local people to do. And what I'm kind of looking for is a little bit of guidance for how to do that. And I sent it through Skype and emailed to several of you.
Okay.
I realize that's not the major thing for NLA to do, but some guidance would be appreciated. And we've got quite a few good suggestions on the status call tonight, too, on Francine.
Now, that's on the, what was that again? Refresh my memory. You're talking about for the...
Well, our governor violated state code by saying everybody could do a mail ballot. And there's already a provision in Montana to do absentee ballots, which Trump talks about, too.
Yeah, which everybody knows about.
Ballot is against code.
Absentee ballots, they've been here forever, but you have to apply for
yeah,
them.
That's a whole different thing.
Right. It's not, you don't just get them mailed to you. You got to go apply for them. And there's guidelines for them. Now, I think one of the reasons that the governors think that they can do this is because we're under a state of emergency. But, you know, we've been in wars. We've been in all kinds of things before. We've had pandemics before. And they've never, ever stopped voting. They've never done voting through the mail because we had a pandemic or because we had a war. There's no precedent for it at all, you know. Besides the fact that this is a fake pandemic, it's a plandemic. I mean, we could go there, too, if you wanted to. But, you know, listen, one of the things that Trump did that was good is he let the governors decide what they were going to do with their states so they could show their true colors, and that's exactly what they did. And it's been like fish in a barrel ever since. He throws another lure in there with a worm on the end, and they bite for it every time. And I think he's just playing the art of war with them. So, like I said before, I understand that he's implemented this this blockchain technology in the post office, and it's electronic and it can't be hacked or anything. And so if we're going to vote through the post office, if for somehow they would change that, it would be actually, that would be more secure than the voting booths. I've been getting stuff about people trying to vote in their primary elections, and in some states they got the Democratic and Republican primaries going on at the same time, and the Republican thing wouldn't light up. And when the woman told the poll watcher that, she said, well, you got to vote Democrat today, there's no Republican voting or some crap. And happened to a couple of people. And finally, one woman said, "Look, you can fill." She said, "Look, you can fill a paper out and send it there, and they'll send it in for you." She said, "But I don't suggest you do that." She said, "I suggest you go down to the main office, the main election office, and put it in there." So obviously, even on a local level, they were playing games, you know. So I don't know. And I've also heard that the a lot of the software on the Diebold machines and stuff was software that was written by George Soros, one of George Soros' companies, which is ridiculous to believe that they would ever get software written by any of George Soros' company. You know, and that's one of the reasons they were so sure that Hillary was going to win, because it was like, you know, two for me, one for you type thing in the program. And so, actually, they were very surprised she didn't win, and that's only because they went through and made sure in those states that, that it was important that the votes got through, and they made sure that they cleaned out the corruption there. And they, you know, they put extra police there, and they did a couple raids. Of course, you don't hear about it because the news is not going to tell you about it. So I don't know where we're going, but definitely, I know that Trump says it's not going to happen, and the more he says we're not going to do it, the harder they push. And I don't know what the legalities would be of this blockchain voting at the post office if they are going to do it. But it would be the only way to do it and have it come through instantaneously and not have a bunch of stuff being left all over the place that they couldn't control, you know. So, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of court cases and things like that. And really, if it's the law that says it can't be done, unless they change that law, I don't see how they can do it. Even the corrupt Supreme Court has to hold up the law. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sure that there's going to be cases filed in there that are going to stop that. I mean, it's too late now. Look at it. It's, what is it, August? September, October, November. That's 3 months. I don't know that they'll be able to do anything at this point to facilitate that, you know, either way. But we'll see. I mean,
could we do affidavits?
Affidavits or petitions? I think that the more pressure we put on, the better. You know, I mean, look at, that's part of us bringing the bottom up. You know, look at this. It's kind of a slam dunk because the law says they can't do it. You know, what's the point of having a law if you're going to break it? And I don't believe that there is any emergency edicts or anything that says that they can do that in the case of emergency. You know, it doesn't say that the Constitution is suspended in case of emergency. It never is. I mean, under martial law, which is really shouldn't even apply. I mean, we're not under martial law, and really martial law is for when you take over a country and you're taking control of it. But I think Lincoln, what was those papers that were written when Lincoln was in and put us under martial law? And basically it says if the courts are open and there's no hostilities within 30 miles, then guess what? The Constitution prevails. You're not under military rule, and Brent knows more about that, you know. So I don't know what excuse they could use, you know, to try to say we're in a state of emergency, you know. I mean, short of some company hitting us
with
an animal.
Local level.
Well, I think you could, you know what, I don't know, I guess at the local level you could file a case in the county court and get the local judge to put an injunction against it because it's the law. Isn't he bound to follow the law? So when the Board of Elections is not following the law, you could go down there and say, look, I want an injunction filed by you. I'm filing an injunction. You need to make an injunction against this because the law says this. And I would wait for, like, like next month, you know, get it closer so there's no time for them to really answer it or do
push
anything.
Back.
Yeah. Right? Okay. I mean, look, we need an injunction.
Would you be willing
to
phone call tomorrow?
What's that?
Would you be open to a phone call sometime this week?
Yeah, sure.
Or are you pretty busy?
I'll
give you a call.
Call me, try me, because I pick up. I try to pick up. And I got you on my, you'll come in as Dan because you called me before, so I don't usually answer phone calls of numbers I don't recognize, but I have you in by name. because you have called me before, so I know that you'll come up as Dan.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, and I really thank you for all the work you guys are doing. And
you're
thank
welcome.
You, Grant.
Okay. Let's see. So, all right. I got Dan from Carolinas. I'm going to let you go there, Mr. Montana Dan. Okay? And I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Got Dan from Carolinas, which we will finish up with. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, greetings to everyone again tonight. Mr. Brent just really gave us the education that we had probably needed a long time ago and probably need to hear a lot more about it. It's so profound, and it's worthy of us putting our minds anytime we're talking concerning about the Holy Scriptures. That is the law, our natural law. That is higher than any law that could ever be manifest by man, or and it is profoundly the truth. It's the Alpha, the Omega, and when our Heavenly Father gives us those types of directions, it's paramount for us to take heed, and this land would be way better off from all the plains, from the four corners of what makes up North America, our continent here, and worldwide, as far as that goes, for us to be very versed, and like Brent and then too earlier tonight, Mr. John Drash was telling us, it's up for us to become educated. We are to keep on keeping on, renewing our minds as to this word, which is the living word, which is the truth. Well, I don't want to take place of the great scriptures that Mr. John Drash always alerts us to, and from time to time we are given a expertise on a lot of scriptures with Mr. Brent there. And so I'll move from that and like to address some things that could be beneficial to a lot of other people. We need to pray for our Heavenly Father's blessings upon whatever leaders or from the president right on down across the various ways our government is set up, the House of Representatives and the Senate, etc., the judiciary. We need to pray for all public officials and for a peace to come across this land, and for us to be more mindful, to be concerned about our neighbor, and for the reuniting and renewal of minds that Brent was talking about tonight, that he was going to talk a little bit about the politics and stuff, across the different national conventions. And then besides that, at these different offices up there in Washington, D.C., it is paramount that those people that are elected, and for the reasons they are there with their oaths of office, that they start working together instead of using their office the day one that they start out every day from there on, in a collective group against this party or that party or whatever, and never do they really bear down and attend to the business and for the sanctity of all people, no matter who you are, independent party, Republican or Democrat, or just, I guess you'd say, non-party. You know, there's some of those Well, anyway, that's a little bit of a comment there. My situation, I'll move away from all this. My situation is still ongoing, and it appears to me that I tried my best today to send a composite, and I was on the phone with Mr. Chan, and he will be quite, if you get a chance tomorrow to talk with him, aware that I tried to send 20 PDF formats, and this is some of the best profound legal research in regard to settling my parents' two estates. Really, there's a third estate, and I'm not going to go in all of the various estates and the names. We've done that before. However, the last estate is left with a will, and that will has got to be probated. There's no way about getting this result without working with the county, because there's foul play, and we don't want to go into that because we've been talking about that for a long time. And so the good news is that 20 PDF formats went into the county to what I think is one of the possible chances to settle this estate, and it went into the county manager. And then before that occurred, I had about an hour and maybe 30 to 40 minutes, somewhere along in there, tremendous conference with this county manager. So there's various law enforcement that here recently, starting last week, are now looking to peer like they're going to do maybe a little bit more towards due process of law and take in these legal documents that are now being allowed to be the county to receive them, and as to where we will have the clerk of court, a particular detective, I'm not going to call any names, but with law enforcement, is now, along with a particular individual in the 13th District Attorney's Office, that's all up there, and needs to have done their job a long time ago, all these officials. If I can ask this question, about 3 Monday nights back, there was a young lady that came on there and mentioned something to the effect of she knew the right procedure to put a motion in for arbitration, and why not arbitration when every time when we always go to these judges, they have no jurisdiction anyway and authority. So why shouldn't we elect to move civil matters, especially the civil matters that's in this estate, on to arbitration? And I've been researching heavily in the last last week and this week, starting again, and it looks like arbitration could be, as we, Mr. Gerard, you mentioned in the past, could be the real opportunity when we've not had due process of law. And, of course, you know as many times we've learned that that's the only way we're going to due process of law is if we're in a court of record and that it is a common law procedure. And whether it's a grand jury indictments or grand jury actual trials, I want to see what your take is as to, even though I tried to send these today, these 20 different PDFs, I might have made a mistake and tried to send too many of them. I tried to send them to Mr. John, first to Jan, Mr. John, to you, Gerard, and then Brent, and the two emails there. And before, when I sent them single out to single emails, I had no problem. But today, it looks like about
I don't know, 50% or more of them came back. I was really aggravated with this to see that you folks didn't get the emails properly. What's your take on this?
Well, I think that the powers that be are paying attention a lot more than they were as we get closer to this election, and anything that takes any power away from them, they're very up on. I've noticed that I've been censored a whole lot more in the stuff that I'm doing, you know, that there seems to be shenanigans here and there.
Yeah, but his problem is mostly it's too big. Look at everything. Everyone has hammered down on the size of email attachments.
Yeah.
Skype has reduced the amount that you can send. And it's really a problem trying to send anything that's big. But there are services that you can use to do that. And, you know, between us within our, you know, organization, we have a place called File Depot where we're able to share rather large files to each other. But we can't share that, you know, offer that to just anyone. It gets too complex to have so many people involved in that. So it's just between the leadership. But, yeah. There is a thing you can do. There's goodness, what's it called? There's a couple of them that you can go to. I'm taking a quick look at see if I can find the name of some of these services. Yeah, one of them is free large file hosting. It's called Sendspace.com. Another one is Dropbox. It's Dropbox.com. All you have to do is put your email of the person you're sending it to, a message, upload it. And they get an email, they can download it, and it's free of charge, both of them. And they don't ask you for a lot of information, just your email, you and who you're sending it to. So, anyway.
I totally wholeheartedly agree with you, Mr. John, and I have used one of my, what I call computer gurus down here in Sunset Beach. I won't call his name, but he did a Dropbox, and I've been told by one of my office managers that the simple way would be to upload these. Now, they're 20 actually PDFs, and of course, these documents are certified for the most part documents, and I had no trouble. I sent them on to this supposedly high powerful, potent law firm in Durham, North Carolina, which I'm not going to call that agency's name, had no trouble, sent all 20 of those straight on through there, and it takes a lot of time to do that, and yes, Mr. John, you're so correct. If I could get these set up with Dropbox, then all I would have to do is send the Dropbox. And then you folks there, all you'd have to do would be click on the Dropbox, and you could pick and choose at will those out of those, you know, in succession, those 20 that are the first. And boy, that I'm gonna tell you, that is some awesome evidence. Lord Amherst, it's a term in courtroom. I know you know what I'm talking about. Prima facie evidence, yes. And it's also certified for, in case any of these documents, any of these issues might would have to go to the Supreme Court in North Carolina or elsewhere. I really kind of feel like, if I can say this, and I want to kind of behoove you guys, I believe that once you get a clear picture of seeing what is in the first, what I call the first two trays, which are 20 PDF formats, I believe you're going to see that there's no question evidence for expunging these fraudulent forgery deeds, and then on top of that and some other stuff that my brother's put in there about the forgery or the fraudulent power of attorney and various other things. But also then there is the need, and you'll see this, for a default judgment as to a one-page document. That is all in this, what I call the first two trays. In the morning, we'll start with other trays, and I'm going to see if I can't try to redo what was sent to you folks, and maybe I can get someone to help me put it in, upload it. I'm not that good about that part of doing the Dropbox, but I have had permission and have had a professional to do some of my other legal briefs and put in a Dropbox. So I think that would hopefully cure the inadequacies there today. The last thing I would like to say is maybe tomorrow I can have a chance again to talk with Mr. Jan, and you folks can sort of give me an idea of, you're busy, and I want to support National Liberty Alliance. And by the way, I want, just as soon as those books come in, especially of trying to train me better as for committee men, and also to train me in regard to, once we get whatever you want us to feel comfortable to share with our sheriff, we are under your direction, and we don't want to sidestep. We know that when you're telling us whatever, it's definitive, and it's the best procedure for us to get the mission statement of bringing our government back to us, we the people. And you said it best with your book, Government by Consent. So I'm all there, all ears with you guys, and as soon as those different books come about, I'll certainly want to purchase there. So maybe tomorrow, yeah, I'll try to touch base with Mr. Jan, and hopefully you guys can get together, especially hopefully Mr. Brent will also maybe give me a certain fee amount that what would be expected to review my documents and stuff. So that's what I want to say here tonight.
Did you fall asleep, Gerard?
Beg your pardon?
I was wondering if Gerard fell asleep. I don't know.
Oh, I'm talking and I'm muted. I'm sorry. I said, with that, we're going to sign off. But I said, we've also been using this WeTransfer for videos, and I don't see why it wouldn't work for files. It'll transfer any big file, and it's free, and it works very good. John, I sent you a couple.
Yeah, you can make a lot of attachments, too. You can attach 20 PDFs, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's called WeTransfer. It's free service. You sign up, you put an email in, and then when you put it in, what you do is you wait for them to send you a number on your email, then you verify that number, and they'll send it to any email that you've put it through. And it works really well, really good.
And Mr. Gerard, you say you call it WeTransfer?
That's the name of the service, WeTransfer, and I'm really happy with it.
Is that WeTransfer.com?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, that sounds mighty good.
I know that couldn't send any place else, and they went with that thing, and it's for free.
I know that the Dropbox stuff, I've used that before. I know what Mr. John said, and I believe that part wholeheartedly, and I've been authorized to with that in the past. But this, I'll bring this up to my comrades, and hopefully maybe we can, because time's of essence here.
I said, check it out.
Absolutely. And I mean, because I do need some representation of nothing else with a motion, but towards my brother, what his latest situation is, and a copy of that case in district, bankruptcy, Eastern Division, he started out, and I've got to have something to respond or intervene somehow or another as to my our claims that have already set what I think is a precedence and are registered, and that he is way late of ever responding, and is our state is in line for that one page. It's called a preliminary resolution document. You'll see it in time, and I'm needing to get that over to into that court as claims for settlement. So the idea of the arbitration and that young lady, that if you ever find out anything from her about procedure and what would be the rule of law, that they can't deny us to, or me or whoever, that
will
help me with it.
Contact information. I believe I know who it is. I'll go back through and
see. All right. I think you know what I'm talking about. And then there's a lady also that's very knowledgeable. Let's sort of close this and leave it to you folks there. I think you know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And there's a lady, too, that's very versed in the laws and procedures in bankruptcy and the procedures there that may be...
We got a couple of members that are kind of experts in that, and
good,
and arbitration in that, and we could
probably arbitration. Yes, sir.
Okay, very good. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you back here next Monday, same time, same station. God bless you all, and you know, stay in prayer and fasting. The closer we get to this election, the more important that is. And you know, if we all do this together, we'll hit that critical mass that the good Lord's looking for, if we haven't already. And I don't know that we have or not, but I'm not going to assume it. And I would say right till the bloody end, we got to pray like our life depended on it, and because it does. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
And you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.